feel much better. Okay? So, let me see what we got here. We don't have that many people here today either. Good evening, everybody. This is Natural Liberty Alliance weekly conference call. It is Monday, August 16th, 2020. No, 2021, excuse me. I lost a year. Anyway, I'm not going to start with a song or anything. John is ill this evening, and I'm not much better. I got a bad tooth I'm fighting, so we're going to go through this and go through our normal NLA stuff and questions and answers and see where we go from there. So, without further ado, I want to open up the queue. Maybe if somebody could do that. But in the meantime, Jan, do you have any announcements for today before we get going? We should get them out. Thank you.
Yeah, Gerard, I have a little something I wanted to mention. I posted on the website on the Natural Healing Call page and in the newsletter a couple of items that are of interest that talks about graphene oxide.
Well, that's good. That's good to know, yes.
Yeah. First, what I'd like to do is just read through what two researchers have found. One of them has the last name of Delgado, and I forget the last name of the other. They're listed on the information in the newsletter and on the website. And it talks about these characteristics that they've determined. What they did, they sent a copy of a bottle or sent a bottle of the vaccine to a testing lab and had it analyzed to see what it was. And it turns out there is graphene oxide in it. Well, it turns out that graphene oxide fibers are in the plastic masks we've been using. And graphene oxide fibers are on the PCR test swabs they use to determine if you have had COVID or actually a cold or other viral infections. Doesn't necessarily mean anything. The way they use it, they repeat the test over 35 times, so they get almost all positive reactions no matter what went in. Graphene oxide is also in all the COVID-19 vaccines. Graphene oxide creates thromboses. Graphene oxide creates blood clots.
No kid.
Graphene oxide disrupts the immune system. Graphene oxide can trigger a cytokine storm. Graphene oxide toxicity can instigate pneumonia. Graphene oxide creates a metallic taste in the mouth. Graphene oxide causes inflammation of the mucous membranes. Graphene oxide produces a loss in the sense of taste and smell. Graphene oxide is magnetic, especially at the injection site. And I'm sure you've all seen some of the
no kidding
where people stick spoons and knives in their arm where they got the shot. Well, that's why. Graphene oxide also blocks detoxification in the body by blocking glutathione that is naturally produced in the body. Graphene oxide may be activated by 5G frequencies. This is why they had such a massive problem around Wuhan. It didn't extend to the rest of the country. It was just localized because that's where they initially lit off the 5G systems. Graphene oxide was already included as an adjunct event in the flu shots in 2019, so they started early just to get you. Graphene oxide passes through the blood-brain barrier. And it's very detrimental. So we're going to see a lot of dementia and Alzheimer's cases come up. So it seems like graphene oxide produces all those things which people have been calling, Fauci and company, the symptoms of COVID-19. You know, they talk about, oh, you have a metallic taste in your mouth. Oh, you have this. Oh, you have that. Well, what you have is graphene oxide poisoning. You don't have COVID. The COVID virus has not been isolated. So apparently, they have determined that this is what you have. It's simply poisoned by graphene oxide. Now, fortunately, these same two researchers have come up with a list of things that one can do to combat the effects of graphene oxide. One, I don't know how to pronounce it. It's quercetin.
Quercetin.
Quercetin, yeah.
Yeah, that's close enough.
Yeah, or hydroxychloroquine. Mm-hmm. They both work the same. It's a mechanism of action that blocks the virus with the spikes around it from attaching. These two supplements will help with the spike protein damage and apply to most organs of the body, but not all. Ivermectin. We've all heard from Fauci that ivermectin was very bad. You shouldn't use that or hydrochloroquine. It might kill you and so on and so forth. Well, it turns out that that's a very good weapon in the arsenal of combating this. It blocks spike proteins from attaching to the cell membrane. An alternative is neem oil, which I'm not familiar with. I've heard of it before. I never looked into it. Another thing that's useful is dandelion leaf, good old dandelions. The leaf extract blocks spike proteins from attaching to cell membranes. And then one that I've used for 10 years or more, and I stand by, it's chlorine dioxide. It's simple, it's inexpensive, it stores well, you put it in a dark place, it'll last for 10 years, and get it out when you need it. It's also called Miracle Mineral Supplement. That's where I ran across it first. What it does is it neutralizes and eliminates the spikes, and that's what we need to do.
The other couple things that work on that I know and I also do myself is pine needle tea and fennel seed. I actually mix them and make a tea and drink it every morning just as a prophylactic. And
they say that white pine needle tea is good. Do you differentiate between the different types of pine?
Well, I am using white pine, but there's another site that says you can use just about any of them. Some are a little better than others. The American Indians used all of them because they all had healing properties. But the white pine is that long, bristled, you know, needle. It's not the short one. But I also read that you can pull them off of cedar trees. And I mix cedar with it because it gives it a really nice flavor. I put a little honey with it, you know what I mean, in the pine needles, and it's pretty good. Of course, sometimes I put in Bragg's apple cider vinegar, and that makes everything a little bit more, you know. But I'm telling you, just with the pine needles and a little honey, it's pleasant. It really is.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's also a protocol for those people that have been injected, had the jab. Mm-hmm. To help them combat that. So it includes coital silver and several other things, zinc, vitamin D3, lipospheric vitamin C, iodine, and PQQ, and so on. So that's all included on those references in the newsletter and in the Natural Healing page on the website. So if you've had the jab, here's a chance to counteract what you got. If you get sick with the we can call it COVID, I guess, then it also tells you what to take for that. So I would highly recommend you dig it out, look at it, print it out in case you lose your computer, and so you have it, and stock up on these things now, or at least locate a source of a good pine tree or whatever, you know.
And the health ranger, Mike Adams, also claims that, and it wasn't just him, I think it was Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, who's been looking into a lot of this stuff,
right.
that you could use the rinds of lemon and I think grapefruit.
Yeah.
And you boil them for 3 hours, that turns into hydroxychloroquine.
Right.
And the health ranger said, oh, I'm going to run them through a... He was going to experiment with a espresso maker, because that's high pressure and high temperature, and he thought that that would be an easier way than boiling it for 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought that you could extract it that way. This is all interesting stuff, because originally, when it first broke that everybody that got the shot, the head CEO of Pfizer, I forget his name, the doctor. He was a doctor, and he was, you know, his PhD. He said, they're all going to be dead within 2 years. And he said, maybe three. So it's going to kill them. There's nothing you could do about it. It was very, he was very bleak. If you took that shot, your life is short, and you're going to be sick the rest of your life, and your life is going to be shortened. And when they asked him how long, he said, 3 years. So that wasn't very good.
You know, that could be true, Gerard, because I ran across an article, and I also put that in the newsletter. I didn't put it on the website, where someone that was involved in the graphene oxide production, probably on the patented stuff on it, and he said he has a very simple test. You just do a blood test, and you look at how much of the blood is messed up, and by that percentage, if you have 30% of it left, bad, in about 7 years you'll be gone. If you have 70%, in 3 years you'll be gone, and so on. So by a blood test, they claim that you can tell how many hours, weeks, months, days, years you've got.
I'll be honest with you, I think they knew all this ahead of time. I mean,
the
researchers are finding it out now, the ones that are doing their own research, but I believe that they knew all this stuff.
Right.
You know, it's eugenics is what it is, and they want to lower the population, and now, of course, they want booster shots. What do you think that's all about?
Well, that's because the percentage of damage to the blood goes up each time they get a booster shot.
Exactly.
You get booster shots, your number of years to survive goes down by three.
Right, right. So they want to make sure they get the kill. This stuff should have been pulled off the market months ago.
Yep.
Months ago. The damage that it's doing is ridiculous. And I have a scanner that's hooked to, you know, the county emergency, and I'm telling you, people are dropping dead right and left, and
mm-hmm.
it's all strokes and thrombosis and can't breathe and this and that, and it's more older, but it's also younger. It's also, you know, younger people succumbing, because, you know, if you take this shot and you have any problems, co-committing conditions, it's just as bad as it is for an older person, you know. But with all kinds of crazy stuff going on every day.
Right.
I've never heard so many helicopters rushing people to the hospital with helicopters. And my prediction is they're not going to call a helicopter for strokes anymore, because it's a waste of their time.
Hmm.
You know, most of them don't make it. But
well, there's a second effect here. There is a certain number of people that either immediately or with 1 week die from the jab. And if they survive, usually those people shortly thereafter have severe enough after effects that they, you know, can't work and so on, and they're pretty well laid up. So
yeah, they get the neurological symptoms, the Guillain-Barre and all that stuff.
Right.
Yeah, and
they basically get mad cow disease from the spike proteins.
Right, like right. That. Holes in the brain. Yeah, it's terrible.
Exactly.
Unbelievable. What a nightmare.
Yep.
Only the devil himself could dream something up like this.
Yep. I remember about 20 years ago, someone said, well, just when you think it got so bad it couldn't get any worse, it will.
Yeah.
It is.
It's, well, you know what? If what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And I don't want to be macabre or anything, but if you think about it, it's kind of like a Darwinian thing, because more liberals and Democrats took the shots than conservative and Republicans. So they're removing their genes from the gene pool.
Yeah, the gene pool is getting smaller and not
right.
In their favor.
So that mindset maybe will die out. Anyway, we can hope. And I don't know. It's not good. I have a little video I might want to show during the show, you know, put on at one point. It's this woman, and she has, I think she has her own podcast, but her husband was home 7 days with pneumonia, didn't want to go in the hospital, and he started getting worse, and one of her friends that works in healthcare came with the pulse meter, and he was down to like 79% oxygen, and she said, you got to take him to the hospital because he'll die at this point. So they brought him in, and she said, we just want oxygen. Oh, right away, oh, no, you know, he needs a ventilator. He wasn't in there 5 minutes. Then they did the COVID test, and he came up positive. Oh, she said, all of a sudden, everybody's going crazy, and the spacesuits came out. And you just got to hear this. It's not that long. But what she did and what her daughters did saved her husband's life and got him out of the ICU in 3.5 days, which never happens. And she's saying it's not the COVID. It's not. She said, look, what they're calling COVID is influenza A and B, and sometimes you get pneumonia with that. But right. their protocol is what's killing the people, and that's her point. And she fought, and she said, I want him on intravenous C. They gave her all kinds of trouble, and they even started intravenous C, and then her daughter got looking, and it was only 5 milligrams. She had to go in and holler at him because you need. You know, you need 50,000 or something like that. It's not five, you know. I mean, what's 5 milligrams? Even a little baby wouldn't affect them 5 milligrams, you know. So it's an interesting story, but the way she stuck to her guns and her tenacity, it's a good story for people to not be sheep and to fight. And that's what she did with her and her daughters, and they saved her husband's life. So I thought that was a good information for people and give them the idea of what's out there and what to do.
Right. You know, some of the accounts that I read in hospitals that use the ventilators like that, they had 100% death rate.
Yeah, if once you get on it, you'll never get off it.
That's right. It kills you.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
You drown in the own fluids in your lungs.
Well, first of all, when they put you on it, they have to put you in a coma, which is not the best place to be when you're suffering from pneumonia. You know what I mean?
Right.
If you can't cough and get that stuff out, I mean, and you're laying there, that's going to make the pneumonia worse, I think.
Yep, it does. That's what's killing them.
Yeah. So, and you notice there's no influenza cases anymore since COVID came. We've healed influenza.
98% cure rate.
Yes. I mean, it's so stupid. People, it's common sense. If you got common sense, the information's right there in front of your face.
Yeah. The word for the sheeple was that, look at how effective the COVID vaccine was. It cured the influenza, too.
Yeah.
I ran across that one.
Yeah, it killed them all. Crazy stuff. I'm gonna try share screen. I've never done it. I'm going to see how this works for me. And if Brent's standing by, and
yes,
I don't, well, if he wants to do a Bible reading, I didn't prepare one. I was not prepared for this show, I'm sorry to say. And let me see, is this... I think this is it. Let me try this. Well, Brent is on deck. Brent, if you got a Bible reading or something you want to do, get prepared. I don't know if my screen share is going to work here.
Yes, Gerard, I heard you. I had to get unmuted.
Okay.
I'll pull something up, if that's all right.
That's fine. I appreciate it. Well, in the meantime, I think you can do that, and I'll try to get this screen share going for late after you're done, Brent. How's that?
All right. Well, I'll get started here. This is Brent Allen Winters, Harlan. That's late in the day. CommonLawyer.com, www.commonlawyer, and CommonLawyer. Oh, somebody says raise your volume. I'll try that. I'm doing the best I can. I'll try to talk a little louder. More volume. Can you hear me, Gerard?
I can, but I turned myself all the way up when Jan came on because he was kind of low. So.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll read here. This is from the first epistle of the apostle, John. And John has three epistles there toward the end of the Bible. He wrote the gospel. Oh, Terry says better. Well, okay, whatever I did. He wrote the gospel of John, and then three epistles, and then the book of Revelation. I like to call it the book of John the Revelator. But this is 1 John. 1 John chapter 1 says, this is from the Winterized Version, by the way, the Winterized Version of the Bible. What was from the first yield? What we have heard and what we have beheld with our eyes, what we gazed at and our hands handled, about life's proven word. And the life was clearly shown, and we have beheld it, and testify, and declare to you that endless breath of life, which was clean unto the Father and was clearly shown unto us. What we have beheld and have heard, we declare even to you, and so that you all might have fellowship with, namely, us. And our fellowship, moreover, with the Father and with his Son, Safener Messiah. And these things write we to you, so that our gladness might be, having been forever filling out. And this is the message that we have heard from him and declare up to you, that the lawgiver is light, and in him is no darkness, not even a smidgen. If we spell out that we have fellowship with him and might walk about in darkness, we lie and do no proven fact. If, however, we walk about in the light, like as he is in the light, we have fellowship with one another, and the blood of Safener Messiah, his Son, cleanses us from each and every guilt of unintentional law-breaking. If we say that we have no guilt of unintentional law-breaking, we lead ourselves astray, and the proven fact is not in us. If, however, we acknowledge our guilt of unintentional law-breakings, he is stalwart and upright, so that he might forgive to us those guilt of unintentional law-breakings and might cleanse us from each and every wrong-headedness. If we say that we have not broken law, we make him a liar, and his proven word is not in us. That's 1 John chapter 1 from the first epistle of the Apostle John. Gerard, back to you.
Thank you, Brent. Okay, so back on this subject of COVID, because this is what's going to, inundate us over the next 6 months. And, there's a babble going on right now that this seven-headed hydra is dying, but it's not going down easy. They're still talking lockdowns and COVID passes and all this crazy stuff, and I pray that doesn't go through. I mean, they're even saying, seeing some things that Homeland Security has put out, all these things that make you a terrorist, and one of them is denying the COVID or thinking that President Trump's going to come back and all these crazy things. Now, if Homeland Security's putting that out, what it tells me is that they're desperate, that the black hats are dying. If they got to resort to that much terrorism on their self and fear, that tells me that they're grasping for straws at this point. So just keep the faith. Don't listen. Don't run out and get a bunch of guns in the street. What you need to be doing is what NLA is preaching, and you need to do committees of safety, and you need to get your sheriff on board. You need to have neighborhood watches. I'm telling you, if they think they're going to go door to door and try to vaccinate people, if we all stick together and do a phone tree, and the minute we hear that they're doing that, if they look at those guys, should not make it home. And this is probably terrorism I'm talking, but this is our Constitution, and this is what our forefathers had to do. I'm telling you, they don't have the wherewithal for the people and their militias to rise up against this tyranny. They wouldn't make two houses and they'd be done. And then they'd have to go find another SWAT team. And you know what would happen? They wouldn't get another SWAT team. That's my belief. So, you know, if they think they're going to go door to door and force, you know, this whole thing in the first place is so unconstitutional and ungodly, it's unheard of, that they could take an experimental vaccine, or any vaccine for that matter, and forcibly put it on you. That's the height of losing your right. Look at our rights in this country are basically all couched in property rights, and your first piece of property is your body. And I don't remember which forefather it was, but maybe you know, Brent. He said something, and it was one of them. It was one of the big ones. He said, if you let the government control things, eventually they're going to be telling you what you can and can't put in your body. Now, this is back in 1776 or whatever. He already had the foresight to know that this would be what would happen when government usurps its power. So our forefathers knew about all this, and they gave us remedy for all this because they went through it. And it's up to us to study what they did and then even and improve on it. So that book, Government by Consent, that we're just putting out, that needs to go to everybody's sheriff. We need to get the sheriffs on board, and if they're not, you need to get rid of them however you can. And I'll tell you what, Dave Mongello did a very good video on the common law grand juries and grand juries themselves. And there's a whole movement going on in Western New York to reinstate them because, you know, they I think it was 1941, they said the grand juries could no longer do presentments. Well, what a presentment is a charge by the grand jury of their own volition, not coming from a prosecutor, where they find government malfeasance or abuse on their own, and they indict it, and they cause it to be fixed. They didn't like that. They call that runaway grand juries. But yet the New York State Constitution has in one of its articles that the power of the grand jury presentment can never be made less or written away by a law. So that was New York State back at in those days, striking back at the judges and the courts that said that grand juries can't do presentments, because they absolutely can. All we have to do is start doing them. And a matter of fact, Dave Mongello had a case up there where in 1945 or something, the grand jury did a presentment, ignored the law. You know, and that's that case, U.S. versus Williams, that shows the power of the grand jury, that they are above any part of government. They are a part of the government, but not in the sense that of the three branches. They're like a branch unto themselves. So that's we the people taking control and policing our government. And if we don't put that back in, we're done. It's up to us to keep these bad actors in place, and this is how you do it. And if you think you got to wait for an election to do it, that's baloney. Look, at you find one of these guys doing something wrong, he gets indicted and he's out. He's done. He's finished. I mean, Cuomo left, but that was a bunch of baloney. Cuomo should have been taken out before he murdered all those people, or right after he murdered all those people by pushing them into the nursing homes to try to get the numbers to come up. But anyway, I don't want to get on a big, long thing, but I can't believe what's going down before my very eyes here. And let me see if I can get now. This particular video, I think, is good because I think any one of us here tonight could be faced with this situation. And you really need to take stock of yourself. And you really need to pull yourself up by your bootstraps and listen to this woman, how courageous she was, and the difference she made. She saved her husband's life. So without further ado, see if I can get sharing this. Let me know if it's coming up. Let me know when you can see my screen.
I see it.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Kate Daly Show.
But the volume's way down.
Really seriously about what's going on in our hospitals and maybe enlighten you on how you can help and save somebody that you love.
Yeah, it's almost nil.
A pretty harrowing experience with my husband.
Really? Hang on, let me go.
It's like the volume down at the bottom. You need to adjust it.
No, it's blasting me my ears on my speakers, so I think this show... Yeah, here we go. That was the problem. Try this now. Let me know if this is good.
It didn't help.
It didn't help.
No, it did not.
I wonder why. I don't think there's anything else I can do here. Let me see. This is... Boy, she's blasting my eardrums out here. I got start meeting all the way up. This is all the way up. Yeah, I don't know what else, I can do.
I don't know either.
I don't know if I gave somebody else this URL and they tried to share it. I've never screen shared on this computer, but I know that my Windows 7 is getting clunky. So if somebody else wants to try this, I could throw the URL in.
Yeah, and try it. Let's see.
So you want me to send it to you in Skype or?
Yeah, Skype will work.
Okay, let me get you up on my Skype.
Well, unshare too.
Oh dear, yeah. Okay,
the share is off.
All right, now let me get you up. Terry, try this. I'd really like to get this working because it's very good.
Okay, I'll try and share it and see if it works any better.
Okay.
Okay, let's see if anything...
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Kate Daly Show. I want to talk to you today.
Can you hear that at all?
Well, it's blasting me, but how about anybody else?
It's perfect.
It's very good.
Okay, so let it run, Terry. Let it run.
Okay, really seriously about what's going on in our hospital and maybe enlighten you on how you can help and save somebody that you love. I just went through myself a pretty harrowing experience with my husband who had pneumonia, straight up old pneumonia, can you imagine? And they turned it into COVID pneumonia. And so I want to tell you a little bit about our experience and maybe it'll give you some insight on how to help somebody you love or if you know somebody in the same situation, because I have a feeling we're going to have some people in the same situation. So my husband had pneumonia for about 7 days. And we were trying to get through it. Actually, he was taking ivermectin, but I wish we had upped the dose because it's actually based on weight. And so had we upped the dose a little bit more, I think we would have bypassed maybe even going in from what we hear. But we went in to get some oxygen after a good friend who's a practicing medical person came over and did his pulse ox, and it was down to 79. Now, 79 is a little, you know, scary number. And so it was down to 79, and so we went in for some oxygen. And when we went in, of course, we were greeted by Nurse Ratched. I call her Nurse Ratched because the second we went in, my husband couldn't even catch a breath, and she was there putting a mask on him. So medical common sense would tell you that you wouldn't do that to somebody that can't breathe. But I said, no, don't do that to him, and she immediately called security. And the security was standing by so that I wouldn't say anything anymore while she did her hardcore work, I guess, on getting him in through the door, and into the hospital. But she was, you couldn't even talk to this person. I can't imagine a person with any medical sense putting a mask on somebody that can't breathe, but there again, we have these people working in our hospital system. We were immediately sent to the ER where a workup of our symptoms, which were just basic pneumonia symptoms, of course, we're all, sitting there, they want to do the COVID test. The COVID test is ratcheted up to 40 magnifications or rotations. Above 25 is considered deceitful, but this test is up to 40 to encompass all flu and virus and cold and everything under that umbrella. So, of course, it's going to come back positive. Well, it came back positive. We were expecting it too, because anything's going to show up. It should say test of illness, but they turned it into test of COVID to give these false positives, right? So the second it came back positive, it was like sirens went off and bells rang, and it was COVID, and of course the zoot suits came on with the hose out of the head and the everybody in a gown head to toe with the gloves and the double masks and treating us like we had bubonic plague. But seconds before, we were all just sitting and chatting. We were fine, talking about symptoms. But anyway, immediately took X-rays. The X-rays came back where there were white, cloudy stuff on both sides of the lungs, and I was immediately told it was COVID pneumonia. So, of course, I'm asking, well, what is COVID pneumonia? Well, COVID pneumonia, they really can't say what that is, except that because it's so elusive and such a mystery after 19 months, but apparently it's just, it's pneumonia. But they call it COVID pneumonia because basically you're going on two tracks. One track is pneumonia, where you get oxygen. They make sure you're stable. They send you home, and it's chicken soup and TLC. The other track is, if the test comes back COVID, you're on a whole different road at the hospital. This is ICU. This is high flow. You can have a high flow machine either way to help you get stable again, but they made a policy change. So it used to be where they put you on high flow if you were low enough. They put you on the high flow oxygen, and you're in a regular hospital room. Well, nowadays, you're sent to ICU. So you're sent to ICU on a where they tell you it's going to be 7 to 10 days. How do they know that? Crystal ball, I guess. So not 5 days, not 6 days, but 7 to 10. So you're there 7 to 10 days, and you're in ICU. And so they could be doing this on another floor in the hospital, but now they can say the ICUs are full, right? Because you got a lot of people that weren't there before. So now the ICU is overflowing. That's what you're going to keep hearing because of these policy changes. And they have a whole track of medicines and everything else. Well, when we were in the ER, we were told with a straight face that, hey, next step is ventilator. And I said, no, we don't do that. Mm-hmm. What do you mean you don't want a ventilator? We're a no ventilator family. Yeah, that's not, Well, they looked at me like I was from Mars. They also asked me if we were vaccinated, and I said, oh, hell no. No. And, of course, that little snippy comment got me the smirk from hell. But anyway, because we're the evil people that entered the hospital unvaccinated. Well, we're about to blow a hole right through that story, aren't we? Because my husband actually walked out after 3.5 days. ICU. Fastest ever. But anyway, my husband was told that I was not going to be that decision for the ventilator, that it was his life, not mine, even though it's our life, but whatever. And he was told that he would definitely get brain damage, really risking that brain damage if he did not accept that ventilator position, they couldn't get the high flow machine to do what it needed to do. And my husband's like, okay, well, all right, I'm still not getting a ventilator. I figured we have to write on Sharpie, No ventilator, just to protect him from all the different doctors. Nowadays, you don't just get one doctor, you get 24 doctors on rotation. So it's really hard because I don't know how much they communicate, but they figure that this whole team effort is helping you, but I actually think one doctor, it would be nicer to talk the whole way through a situation. So we go up to ICU, and I enter with the gown on that they gave me in, because I had to gown up the minute they had the COVID test, not before, but that minute. I walk up to ICU, and I'm told by the nurse that enters, oh, that's infested with COVID. You have to take that off and put on a new one. But what about my shoes, purse, bag, and hair, and face, arms? Is that not infested with COVID? No, just the gown. Apparently, it likes yellow and is attracted to yellow. I know I'm being awfully sniffy, but... So, I just... That makes no medical common sense, because I'm wearing the shoes all over the hospital. I'm wearing my hands, you know, whatever. So it's the gown. So I have to keep switching the gown, and they had all these ridiculous protocols. I have to wear my immune system on my face, because apparently I'm healthy, but my immune system on the inside doesn't work in the ICU. And this is told to me by medical professionals that all of a sudden my immune system is kaput on me suddenly, and I have to get a suit on with a hose and the hazmat to visit my husband, who I just spent 7 days with and didn't get sick. I just spent 7 days with a man, in bed with a man who was sick and didn't get sick, but now apparently I got to wear the spacesuit from hell and the hazmat suit to visit my husband every time I want to say hi to him, and he can hardly hear me through the shield. Okay, so this was our situation. We get in, and I have amazing doctors, and the only reason that we succeeded at this, I think, besides prayers and blessings, were the fact that I had amazing doctors to talk to who urged me right away to get him on intravenous high-dose vitamin C. This makes a big difference. It's not like, you know, a lot of doctors will shame you and think you're silly and, oh, you're a vitamin girl, you know, that kind of thing. But you want just like a little dissolvable, you know. No, I want high-dose intravenous vitamin C because it's even known to kill cancer cells at high doses and help with nucleic acid and help with inflammation, which is pneumonia. And so, oh, by the way, the x-rays, when they did the x-rays were suspiciously like the 2017 pneumonia, 2006 pneumonia, 2000 pneumonia, so all pneumonia looks kind of like each other, suspiciously. I think 3 years ago it just would have been good old pneumonia, but today it's COVID pneumonia. I think there might be some big bucks associated with the COVID pneumonia, you think? So anyway, we're in ICU, and I said, I want vitamin C, high intravenous. The doctors that I'm in contact with, the frontline doctors, are telling me get zinc, intravenous zinc, NAC, high doses of vitamin D, get everything to help him to combat the pneumonia. Well, they said it was a protocol. I said, well, it doesn't matter. I want it. And they said, well, it's not protocol. We don't do that. You don't give vitamins and nutrition to your ICU patients? Why? And the answer was, we don't do that. Not protocol. See, there's 300 and I think, what is it, 341 pages sent by the CDC panel to tell the hospitals what to do for their protocol. And here's the bottom line for you. If you like me to get to the end of this before I explain the rest, it's not COVID that's killing people, it's the protocol. It's over-treatment. I wanted to under-treat my husband with nutrients and vitamins to help fight what he had so he could breathe again, instead of over-treating him, over-medicating him, and shoving him on a ventilator too early, because the death rate of a ventilator is up to 75-80%. Death rate. That's really scary that they were talking ventilator from the minute I got in there. So... finally, they told me they were going to do intravenous and then stuck him on 500, right? A dose of 500 is like what you'd give a child. It's like taking one of those little orange dissolvables. So I said no, and we had to stay on it. We had to stay on it, stay on it, stay on it. My daughters were great help. My daughters rocked in this too, and they knew exactly what was going on and what to ask for too, and are very well versed in all this. And honestly, good doctors and my research for 19 solid months on this really helped him. And that's why I'm passing this along to you. You are the patient, you are the family of the patient, and you can ask for these things, and not only ask, but demand. We also asked for budenocide. Now, they came back with, we don't do budenocide. Why not? you didn't cite on page 205 of their protocol, this is what it says. NIH recommendation, that's the what Fauci's over. I threw up in my mouth when I'm talking about Fauci. The NIH recommendation is there is insufficient evidence for the panel to recommend either for or against the use of inhaled budesonide. Budesonide came out a year ago. Dr. Richard Bartlett talked about it. He's a doctor in Texas, and he got shunned and shamed for mentioning budesonide. Now, budesonide is a steroid to go after the inflammation, whereas they want to put them on a steroid in the ICU that's antiviral. You could say the merits of both, but budesonide was known to help people and was called the silver bullet. And about 2 months ago, it was out in the Lancet, which the doctors are supposed to read, that said that they were switching people in the UK to budesonol because they were getting out of the hospital 3 days faster. So the NIH report says may reduce the need for urgent care or emergency department assessments or hospitalization and reduce time to recovery. Sounds pretty good, right, for budesonol? But the big but, incomplete data and other limitations, and they terminated the study because there weren't enough people in the study. It worked, except that it's insufficient. See, if you have too many medications that work, like ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine and budesonide, if you have too many things that work, how can you come up with, why would you have to come up with a vaccine? There'd be no need for it. So they take all of these things, and at the end of the report said vitamin C insufficient data, zinc insufficient data, all the way to page 290 of the report. Vitamin D insufficient data. Now, we used NAC too, triple dose of that every day, but we put them on at least 10,000 units of the vitamin C and 10,000 vitamin D, and they said they were out of intravenous zinc, but they also said they don't ever use that, like they don't give that to patients, so how are they out of it? Anyway, good question. So we got all these things going for my husband, and lo and behold, within 35 hours, he was laughing and talking and eating dinner, and he was looking really good. And he still wasn't totally out of the woods because it's pneumonia. But he was laughing and talking and walking to the bathroom and sitting in a chair and watching movies and doing really great. And the doc came in and said, wow, you know, he's better than often than anyone in here. 3.5 days later, which really could have been three, he was released. He could have been released really after the 3 days. 3.5 days later, he's totally released out of IHC and took him home this morning, and that's 5 days in the hospital total. Here's what I have to tell you, because we had to consistently refuse the ventilator. We had to ask for all of these things to happen, and even when they said it's not in our protocol, we said we don't care, you're going to do these things for us. And here was another key too, or we'll take him home using hospice, because then all the stuff follows with you, the oxygen and the staff coming, and that's the only way to really get him out of the hospital. A lot of people don't know that. So I said, we'll take him out on hospice if you're not going to listen to us, but you're going to listen to us, because I am not going to go to your protocol. Your protocol, I think, is harmful, and I don't like it. I was told by somebody that vitamins don't work. This person has a medical degree. Vitamins don't work, and it probably did nothing, and budesonol doesn't do much because they use it for COVID, but they use it for COPD. But yeah, but why aren't you using it for all these patients in here? Why are you standing there wringing your hands and waiting for them, waiting for the patient to digress and the oxygen get worse, and you're not exactly helping the patient to progress? You're just watching them slide down, and then you're telling everybody that you're doing the best you can and this is the best care to offer them. And then you're slamming them on a ventilator, even young ages, and then you're saying, well, we did everything we could. I guess they died because we did everything we could because of that killer COVID. It's the protocol. The protocol. I can't say that enough. After being through this and getting to peer behind the curtain, it's the protocol. The protocol coming down from the CDC, I have to say there is a lot of money to be had to put people on ventilators because you get the extra COVID bucks for doing all these treatments. And ICU runs, what, $20,000 to $32,000 a day? There was no need to be in there. He could have just been on the high-flow oxygen in another part of the hospital. There's no reason to over-treat and do all this crazy circus show. There's no reason for any of that. And if I could tell you, you know, what I would do, I would actually go to the frontline doctor's website and I'd call them and I'd do a televisit and I would get drugs sent to me within 24 hours. I would go to IV clinics and I would get large doses of intravenous vitamins to help you. I would probably try out the ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. I would do that first. If it's bacterial, you probably need an antibiotic. But most of it, if it's viral, you don't need the antibiotic, right? I don't have a medical degree. I am not medically trained to give you any advice, but I'm trying to tell you from my perception what happened in the situation with my husband. And my husband walked out of the ICU faster than anybody as a healthy man. So that should tell you something about the fact that I think a lot of these things are not given in the protocols, because you can't shove a shot into everybody's arm by force, which is what they like, if there's things that work for straight up good old pneumonia and flu and things like that. But by calling it COVID and naming it that label, you can sure do an awful lot. You can shut down an economy. You can change voting. You can change the world, and you can force out body autonomy and start to have to give people all these things for the greater good. Greater good is an illusion. The greater good is that you're only benefiting those that are calling the shots. When are we going to figure that out? In the vitamin C study that they said was insufficient data, they only gave 2,400 milligrams a day. You have to do over 10,000, if not 20. Do you think you have power? Yes, you do. Yes, you do. Don't forget that. You tell the doctors what you want. You tell them you're going to take that patient out, and you say no ventilator. If I'm the only person was told I'm the only person to refuse a ventilator and ask for all of these things and change their protocol, that scares me. Why aren't more people doing this? I want you to know that this isn't bashing hospital nurses or doctors. I think they're trying to do what they think is right for the patient or the best. They think this is the pinnacle of care, although what I found out was most doctors don't read studies. They don't know what they're doing when it comes to this. They always say it's elusive and a mystery. It's not after 19 months, I'm sorry. And you have a duty and a responsibility to stand up to this protocol and say it's not working. You have a duty and a responsibility to say, hey, why are we throwing people on ventilators? It doesn't seem like much of a mystery. Why are we doing this? And that's where the responsibility of the nurses and doctors comes in. It's willful ignorance, and you can't stand behind that and then say that and wring your hands and blame COVID and say that you're doing all that you can do. This is a warning. This is a warning to say they're telling you to not add in the things that can help so they can give you a vaccine that you're forced to take. That's not okay. And if we have doctors and nurses standing up to this and saying no, then maybe we have a fight. Maybe we have a fight in this battle. Maybe we can change the course of events. Maybe if you share this enough with people that you know to ask for the things that can actually help a patient, then maybe we'll make some headway here. Please do the things that work. If my leg blows off, then I'll probably have to go to the hospital, right, to get that fixed. But in respiratory, when they create a circus around this and a whole show of we have to do this, 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 and this. Do they really have to do this, 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 and this? Please, please, I'm begging you to share this. Please get this word out that you need to change their protocol, because I think the protocol is killing people. And I think good nurses and doctors, even if they don't realize it, they have to stand up and ask more questions. Doctors don't read studies. They don't read studies. They're not up on the latest because they think they're being given the latest by the hospital administration, and that's a problem. Please share this. Say no to the ventilators, and no wonder we got told, do we have enough ventilators in the country? Because they really wanted to get people on ventilators too fast. And I can't give any medical advice. This is just my situation that happened to me. I take that for what it is. But I certainly know good people to ask, and I did rely on good doctors that get it, that know what's going on, for advice, and I took their advice. So no, I don't think all doctors are bad or nurses are bad. I just think that you have the saucy nurse brigade that's kind of like the soft drink dispensing airline stewardess that got a little power. And the only power is enforcing the drapage of the yellowish fabric and the mask, and they walk around acting like they're the Gestapo for these two items, and these two items are saving humanity. And as silly as that sounds, it's not, but they think it is. And I can get past that because I'm aiding and abetting the neurotic. But when it comes down to the actual care of these patients, we have to change the protocol and call them on it and expose them and shine some light on it. And I hope you all do that. This is the Kate Galley Show, kategalleyradio.com. I have 2 hours of podcasts on this that explain it in more detail, and I sure hope you check those out. Thanks, you guys, and good luck with this. Thank you.
Okay, so there you have it. I think that was very important for everybody here to take note. Because tomorrow you can be in that situation. Or one of your friends or your family. So, time for us to step up to the plate. This is, it all ties in. The sheriff, everything. This is a scandemic, a plandemic. And it was designed to do, to mess with the voting, which they did, because they wanted those mail-in ballots, so you were too sick to come out and vote. That was an excuse to give them room to play with the vote. And so now it's up to us to fix all that. And it's up to us to have our committees of safety and to set up our common law grand juries. And do presentments. So, I don't know. Anyway, Jan, were you done with announcements?
Yes, I was done with announcements. I do have questions if you want to start on questions, or do you want to do Brent first? I think Brent's here.
Well, let's do Brent first, and then we'll go on to the questions. Let Brent do his thing. Brent Allen Winters.
I'm here, Gerard. I'm
author of The Common Law. Go ahead, Brent.
Okay, thank you, Gerard. And I appreciate all these people that take the time on a Monday evening to listen in. And I hope something is said that's worthwhile. Of course, I think what Gerard has been saying is worthwhile, and I do know that doctors, the medical profession, are going to, by and large, oh, there are always exceptions, but they're going to do the bidding of their masters. And their masters are the ones that pay them. Who pays doctors 90% of what doctors make? The federal government. We've been on socialized medicine in America for decades. Who are we kidding? And they're not going to buck the system. And that's the way most people are, of course. Well, I want to talk about this evening not the militia, but the posse. Posse is the county version of the state militia. There is no federal militia. There is none. There is only the militia of the several states. And within in each state is the county posse. Posse comitatus. A Latin, old Latin word. It means the possibility. The possibility of the county. The ableness of the county. Well, each state militia and each county posse, their duty respecting how to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and repel invasions, that is the supreme law of our land. That's what the Constitution said. I just quoted here from the Constitution of the United States, where it lays out there the specific duty of the militia of the several states when called upon, when the President of the United States or a governor of a state calls upon the militia. Specifically here, though, when the president does, this is what the Constitution gives him authority to do, to use the militia of the several states, or any part of them, to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and repel invasions. And that is the supreme law of the land. What does that mean? Supreme law of the land, the phrase law of the land, lifted from Magna Carta. Magna Carta, Stephen Langton wrote it in Latin. so that the academic world of his day could read it. He wanted to stick it in their faces, and he did. The law of the land is an old, it's a common law way of saying due process. What is due process? Well, that is our common law. Our common law doesn't include due process. It is due process. And due process is another ancient name for our common law, as also law of the land. And our Supreme Court of the United States has recognized that that's what that phrase means. It means the course of our common law called due process. There's another way to say it. How do we suppress insurrections and repel invasions in America? Well, according to our fundamental law, our governing law, our the way we do things, the course, how we do it, not what we do, how we do it through the militia of the several states. That's how we do it. And we don't do it by sending the army to the border. It's amazing how we forget these things. I think I've told this story, but my grandmother, who's now gone, she lived to be almost 102, 2 days short. And she used to tell us about her boyfriend. Her boyfriend, I disremember his name, but he loved dogs, and he loved them so much, he got the mange. And they stuck him in a little room right near downtown where the stoplight now is, and it was an upstairs apartment. They locked him in there, wouldn't let him out, but he'd come to the window, and she'd come and see him on a Saturday night. And his hair was all falling out. But his biggest disappointment, she said, was when the Company B, when the president called away Company B from that little town to get on the train and go to the Mexican border to catch Pancho Villa, he didn't get to go because he had the mange. Well, you see, back then, if there was an invasion that needed to be repelled, they called upon Company A, B, C, D, all these little companies of militia units all over the United States. That was before World War I, back about 1914. That's the way we handle it. Why? Because that's what the Constitution says, that the militia's duty is to suppress insurrections and repel invasions. Now, God is the final decider of right and wrong in individual instances, individual cases, and from his decision there is no appeal. Can't go up any higher. He is the court of last resort, and he also is the wellspring of all true right, also called authority, also called jurisdiction. That's what our Declaration of 76 says, paragraph 2. That's what Romans, Paul the Apostle's epistle to the Romans, chapter 13, verses 1 and 2. Go read it. Paul's epistle to the Romans, the Christians at Rome, chapter 13, verses 1 and 2. Key passage. All jurisdiction, all authority is from him. He gives it to who he will. Well, the people of the United States, each one of them, is the direct creation of God himself. And the militia is this able-bodied group of men called the people. The people, there's another common law phrase, means the militia. The militia. That's what our Constitution of the United States begins in the preamble and says, we, the people. That is the militia. That's what that phrase means. God gives authority to each of the people for the creation of government, the legislative, executive, and judicial branches. Now, our Declaration of 76, paragraph 8, recognizes this. It's just a recognition of the reality, but God does give authority to individuals, and they get together and decide, well, we have authority, we're going to establish government. Remember, all authority is from God, Romans 13, 1 and 2. And all that authority, then he gives some of it he divides it up among individual men directly to them. God does not give authority to government. Listen to me close. No place in our fundamental law, our laws of nature unwritten, that is, our common law tradition, and the laws of nature's God written, Blackstone tells us that means the Bible, no place in those writings and those collections of writings do we ever find where God gives authority to government. God doesn't give authority to government. No, he directly and immediately gives it to men. John chapter 1, verse 12, for as many as received him, who? Jesus Christ. To as many as received him, to them gave he authority. There it is. Well, God gives authority to his people, and then the people then establish the respective states and give to these states authority for government. Government doesn't have any authority that the people of their state does not give to them. They have delegated that authority to government, and they, the people of the state, they got it from God. It's part of being a member of Adam's race. Well, the people establish their respective state governments, and then the people, through their respective states, the states of the United States, established our general, that is, our national constitution. We call it the Constitution of the United States. That's why it begins with the phrase, we the people of the United States. Of the United States. See, the people of the states, the people of the states established the general government in Washington, D.C. They also established their own states. And they got authority to do that from God. Thus, the people of the respective United States created and create our Constitution of the United States. We, the people of the United States, the respective states, ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. Then our Constitution, now that they've done this, they've said, here's what our will is, the people of the states. Our Constitution, they put it in there, establishes the limited, separate, and co-equal branches of the general, that is the national government, in Washington, D.C. That is the document that the people of the several states use to establish the general government in Washington, D.C. Thus, the legislative, executive, and judicial powers of our general, that is our national government, are creatures. That means they're created. They're not creator. They are created. They are creatures of what? Our Constitution. But watch this. The people of the United States, which is the militia, are not creatures of the Constitution. The militia of the several states and the county version called the posse comitatus, the posse, are not creatures, creations of our Constitution. Not at all. They're the ones that created the Constitution, you see. Therefore, the people called the militia draw no authority from our Constitution. Let me say that again. We, the people, draw no authority from the Constitution of the United States. No, the government has to get its authority there because we put it there. We are the givers of that authority. We don't draw authority from the Constitution. We are authority as individuals, as John Wycliffe used to say, under the open vault of heaven. We each individually have authority from our Maker. And by contrast, our general government now draws, the general government, that's the one in Washington, D.C., draws its limited authority, very limited authority, only from the Constitution that the people have established. So to sum up, because our militia, the militia, is the people, our Constitution never creates the militia, never creates the posse comitatus, but only has the power to recognize and affirm it. And by the way, that's all the only power you have. You can recognize it and affirm it. Listen to this. No able-bodied adult man can ever become a member of the posse comitatus of his county or the militia of his state any more than he could become a man. Either he's born one or he isn't. You don't become a member of the posse of your county or the militia of your state by joining it. No, no, you already are. I know a fellow down in Georgia, he's a little bit older than me, I believe he's in his 70s, and on his birth certificate, it says, right when he was born, what militia district he belonged to. Have we forgot these kinds of things? Probably they've forgotten them in Georgia, too. That was a long time ago, but his birth certificate still says that. No, you're born. When you're born into a responsibility that God has given you, that's it. And every able-bodied male has a responsibility. It's not an option. People say the right to keep and bear arms is an option. That's not an option. That's a duty. That's what a right is. I was on an L.A. call, been 5 years ago, more than 5 years ago, and a gal got on and dressed me up one side and down the other and told me I didn't know what I was talking about, and she knew lawyers that said that I wasn't telling the truth, and she asked them, and they all said that rights aren't duties, but are corresponding to duties. And my response was, and still is, I don't care how many lawyers, are you kidding me? You're going to ask them what the truth is? Of course, people say, Winters, you're a lawyer. Well, every man ought to be a lawyer. You know, a lawyer is like a sawyer. A sawyer knows how to make the saw cut to the advantage of the man that wants the lumber cut. And a lawyer tries to make the law cut to the advantage of the specific situation and station of his client. That's what a lawyer is. Well, a right is another word for duty, period. That's the etymology of the word. It's an old Anglo-Dane word. It's still part of the Germanic tongues. The Scandinavian tongue, the German tongue, the Dutch tongue, variations of it. It means duty. And the old name of our common law is Volkrecht. Volkrecht. You remember the Volkswagen. Volkswagen. They were very popular when I was young. It was a brainchild of people in the Nazi regime. They wanted a car that was good for everybody in Germany. And they called it the people's, the folks, F-O-L-K in English, the folks, wagon. The wagon, just like we say wagon, and they call the car wagon. What else are you going to call a car? Invent something new like that, an automobile. Well, it looks like a wagon, just doesn't have any horses hitched to it. So we'll call it a wagon. Well, they call cars wagons, and Volk means folk. And the Volkrecht is the people's, the folk, the militia's duty. That's what that word means, and that's what R-I-G-H-T means in our dialect of English today. It is a duty, and all of those so-called rights, those are, right is the Anglo word for jurisdiction. It's the Anglo word for jurisdiction. It's the word for the French, authoritia. It's all the same thing, but in English we say right. Listen, if you have authority, that means you've got a duty to say yes or no or make a decision, do something. Well, that's what a right is. It's a duty. A duty. It is not optional. And every able-bodied male is a member of the militia of his state, whether he likes it or not. And even the ones that aren't as able-bodied, if there's something they can do, they're still responsible. Two duties of the militia are against enemies foreign, that's the duty to bear arms, and against enemies domestic, and that's jury duty, and that's why our oath has two parts to it of office holders. The Constitution, by the way, requires that oath. Well, every able-bodied adult man is a member of his county's posse and of his state's militia by operation of law. It is not his choice. It is the law's choice. I was in Switzerland. I've been to Europe once. I went with a client to Switzerland. What an adventure that was. But I remember riding on, they got these trains that run pretty quick. I was riding on it. Got to talking to this kid. He was all ticked off. And I forget, maybe he knew a little English. I was picking up on their tongue while I was there a little, but not too fast. But he was all ticked off, upset, complaining, because he had to do, it's like militia duty. Switzerland has a militia. Every able-bodied male has to belong to it. But the difference is it's not a common law militia because the government provides the equipment and the rifles and the ammunition. But I suppose it's fashionable to complain about having to do that. But he, being 18 or however old he was at a certain point, you got to do that. Why? Because it's a duty. Well, it's a duty here, too. We've just ignored it for about 175 years or thereabouts. Well, sheriffs in the Western movies often called forth the posse. That's short for posse comitatus, the possibility, the ableness, the potential of the county, the potential power. He called on the posse to help him keep the peace after he took the posse members through the modest formality of swearing them in. Now, you've seen this in the movies. And the sheriff's posse comitatus authority to call forth armed freemen to help enforce law is rooted deep in our Anglo-American common law of government. I say Anglo-American. Why do I say that? Well, that's what lawyers call our legal tradition, Anglo-American. Why? Because it's from the Anglos, the English. And the Anglos, that's more specifically the English, that's where our common law immediately has come from. It came from the north of the continent of Europe before that, and the trace of its history is lost in the fog of antiquity as you go south from there, from those tribes, but they came north to get there, you know. After Noah's Ark, everybody that was north of there, north of Mount Ararat, came north and settled those areas. The posse comitatus, the ableness of the county, thrives in the 21st century United States. American sheriffs use their posse comitatus authority often in the United States, even daily. This booklet that I'm trying to write describes the historical roots. I'm writing it, by the way, and people sign up for our course on the common law sheriff and they get a copy of this book. It's written, but it certainly isn't presentable. But the authority of the posse comitatus is often employed in America. Sheriffs employ it. The power of the posse does not belong only to the sheriff, but to be sure, the first official recognition of the power of posse comitatus was intended for the sheriff's use, and the sheriff remains the chief user. The Second Amendment's protection of the arms rights of American freemen ensures an effective posse comitatus. Why is the Second Amendment so important? Because of the four militia clauses of our Constitution of the United States. The Second Amendment is the fourth. It is the foundation of all the other three militia provisions of our Constitution. I said amendments, I meant militia clauses. The amendment is a clause in and of itself, but it is the only one of the four that does not grant any authority to anybody. The Second Amendment does not grant any authority to anybody. It simply guarantees protection of the duty of an able-bodied man to carry his loaded weapon. That's what it does. Fundamentally, it is protection for him to fulfill his duty to do that. To be, in other words, to be ever ready as the Minutemen were in the early days of our country. The other three militia clauses grant authority to different parts of government. That's the difference between the three militia clauses in the body of our Constitution and the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment is a recognition of a duty and a guarantee of protection of a duty, called a right in old Anglo speech. Well, the Second Amendment, as you know, fosters a well-regulated militia, and in furtherance of its purpose, it is our duty to safeguard the right of the people to keep and bear arms. That's the duty, you see. The posse is the county's subset of its state militia. It's the county's subset of its state militia, and as such, the county posse and the state militia are not identical. But they overlap and are inextricably intertwined so that the disarmament of one would destroy the other. They're distinguishable, but at the same time, they are not distinguishable. It's the armed, able-bodied armed men. The Second Amendment's protection of the arms rights of American freemen ensures an effective posse comitatus. A posse, accordingly, sheriffs and other officials have an authority to call forth the posse comitatus, are third-party beneficiaries of the individual's right to keep and carry a loaded weapon. Sheriffs thus have rightful third-party standing to defend and advocate for the Second Amendment's constitutionally protected rights of individuals in their county. Now, I suspect that at some point people will ask, well, what duty does the female of the species have in this? Well, the female of the species, I'm a strong advocate because it's a matter of law, the female of the species is to be armed. The female of the species is to be proficient at arms and safe at arms. And the female of the species should take pains to ensure that she gains for herself a reputable firearm safety and marksmanship course of training. And those are available throughout the United States. I know people. I could say their names right here, and you could call them, and they could tell you how to get in touch with somebody, but I'm not going to do that because I didn't, again, ask permission. But I'm sure if you get in touch with people, they'll tell you who you can get in touch with to find a lady or a man to teach you as a female, a teenager female, a grown woman female. I have a friend at home whose husband just passed away, Dorothy McLaren. Dorothy is right at 90, and she took her firearms training and safety course, and get this, true story, of all the people in the class, and I knew the fellow that taught the class, he's there at home, of all the people in the class, Dorothy, 90 years old, was the best pistol shot in the class, men and women. And Sheriff Darleaf tells me that he has discovered that the women are better shots with their pistols, I don't know about rifles, he didn't say, than are the men, and there's a reason for that, and it's a good reason. Not to talk about it here, but it's an important reason. It has to do with the distinction of the sexes. But women, if they are to be the safeguards of their homes, as the Bible says, the old word home, keepers at home is the way Paul the Apostle puts it. Well, those Greek words mean safeguard, to the point of violence if necessary. And it can get that crazy, can it? It sure can. And ladies, let me tell you, what comes through the doors of your home? You're responsible for what comes through the doors and the windows and through the piping and the electrical wires and the internet. You're responsible for what comes into your home. Your home is to be a refuge of safety for yourself and those you have chosen to be responsible for. And it's up to you to maintain the purity and the cleanliness of your parcel of real estate in your home. Not that you're looking to shoot anybody, but most times just matter telling people to get out and get away. Well, history recognizes Alfred the Great. No, I'm going to stop here. This is Brent Winters. It's been 30 minutes. Well, Bert and Air. Oh, I'll talk just a little bit longer if I may, Gerard. Is that all right?
Yeah, sure.
Just a little.
One thing, though, the responsibility is to can also mean to shoot that TV. Stuff's coming over.
Good comment. Wage war on the evil empire by... Yeah, you're letting stuff into your house that shouldn't be in there, but that's an important point. Thank you for bringing that up. Well, I just say in general here at the end, go to commonlawyer.com, and we're teaching a course on starting on the 9th of September on the sheriff at common law. And it's going to be 12 weeks long. I want you to sign up for it. And if you have a group you can get together, you can do it on Skype. Some are doing that. There are cut rates for groups, for homeschool families. A lot of cut rate there for homeschool families. Groups of deputies, groups of law enforcement. But any group, please contact us, commonlawyer.com, and you can read about the course there and what we intend to cover. We don't know exactly where it's going to take us. One thing we want to do is raise awareness, as the folk here on NLA try to do, among other things. But one is to raise awareness and do it through education. You might learn something, too. But I'm convinced, after beating my head against the wall over the last 40 years, I've been in politics, I've been in church work, I run for public office, I've been in the courts arguing, and in all of it, I'm disappointed. But that was the curve I had to go through, the learning curve. And I'm down to the sheriff and the grand jury. I'm down to the sheriff and the grand jury. What shall a man do when the foundations are destroyed, says the old book? And these are the foundations. The grand jury, the jury too, but the grand jury. And a while ago, Gerard talked about how it's like a fourth branch of government. Well, that's true. That is true as a matter of common law. We're the only country in the world that still has our only common law country. Only common law countries have juries, grand juries, or trial juries. We're the only one left that really has a meaningful grand jury, and it's weakening, as is our jury, but it's still here because our Constitution of the United States has enshrined it in print as our fundamental law. Well, this is Brent Allen Winters, commonlawyer.com. www.commonlawyer.com. And thank you, Gerard, for giving me a little time, and I'm back to you.
Well, thank you. Hang on, let me make sure I'm not leaving. Okay, good. Thank you, Brent. That was good. I'm going to go to Jan. You said you had questions, so let's start with that.
Okay. The first question is a little bit long, but I'll read it. I was reading the application to open a new bank account and noticed that I had to declare under penalty of perjury that I am a U.S. citizen as defined in federal tax regulations. Federal tax regulations define citizen as follows, and this is in CFR 1.1-1C. Who is a citizen? Every person born or naturalized in the United States and subject to its jurisdiction is a citizen. From the civics class, I learned that you don't want to identify yourself as a 14th Amendment citizen because of the trickery they've done with the word. Are you aware of any way to open an account without declaring this, or... if that's the only way, should I do a paper application and write all rights reserved on top of my signature?
Well, that's a question that's come up numerous times through the years. And I know that there are people that have opened up bank accounts. My son, for one, opened up one with no Social Security number because I never got him a Social Security number. And he found a bank in North Carolina. He was who was sympathetic to that. The guy that ran the bank was connected to the church that he went to, And he had an account for 4 or 5 years before they realized that there was no number on file. Now, they entered something in there to make it go through. And I don't know if it was all zeros in that form, you know, like your social security number. You know, it's like four numbers, two numbers, and then whatever, four more numbers. I think that's what they did. They put 000. I don't know if that'll work anymore. There are other people that become state nationals that don't claim to be citizens, but you have to be careful with that because, you know, if somebody wants to go after you, they could say, well, you're not an American, and they could kick you out. Technically, they can't, but they do because that's the way the evil system works at this point. So I don't know. I mean, you could put all rights reserved. That's up to you. I wouldn't know what to tell you because this is something that's going to, I believe it's going to go away because a U.S. citizen has to do with the corporation of the United States, which they created in Jekyll Island, and you know, and with the Judiciary Act. And so that evil has been here since this country was founded practically, a few years afterwards. So that was treasonous action right there. And again, in 1945, they did some work. So that's also when they tried to destroy the grand jury in New York, and there happened to be some awake people, and they amended our Constitution to say, no, the grand jury, the right of the grand jury presentment shall never be put to bed by any rule or statute or law. So there were some good things that came out of that. You know, it's a heck of a battle. You know, you can rescind your Social Security number. That's a big process to go through, and then you rescind whatever benefits, quote unquote, that you should be getting. But I'm hoping that all goes away because this corporation that's part of that all caps letter of the United States, that U.S. corporation, which is in the Dun and Bradstreet, and it's listed in Puerto Rico, I think that it's going to go away because they're bankrupt, and they've been bankrupt. And if you're a corporation and you're bankrupt, you can't go into business, and you can't make rules and regulations. So it's just a matter of time before this all flushes out. Now, if you want to make the fight on your own, it kind of, you know, what happens is you stick your head up. It's whack-a-mole. They'll whack you down because your head's sticking up. So you have to make a decision of where you want to make your battles in life. You know, so my son ended up getting a Social Security number and a driver's license when he was 21, and they called me and did me a big long interview. They couldn't believe that he went through his whole life with no Social Security number. The guy on the phone was flabbergasted. I don't believe you could do that. I said, I just did it because I'm free. And he was very, very, you know, you would have illegal aliens walking in here, and they give them Social Security the next day. It took him like 9 months to get that number. And I'm sure they went through every piece of paper that I ever submitted. But anyway, that's all I know about that. I just know that, you know, if you go poking the bee's nest, don't be afraid. Don't be surprised if you get stung. That's all I can tell you. For me, at this stage in life, I think to keep my home safe and keep my family safe, when it comes to a point when it's coming into my walls, like what Brent was saying, where you have to protect your home and your family, that's what I'm committed to. And that's what I'm calling my sheriff and telling him, listen, they show up over here at my door for any of this COVID stuff or anything else that you think you're going to do. My guns are going out, and I'm calling you. And I'll tell them right to their faces. But as far as me getting, you know, not claiming to not be a citizen or anything like that, I've given up on all that because I don't think that there's anything that I can do that's going to make any kind of a difference in my life or anybody else's life, because you're dealing with, this is a freight train moving down a track at 90 miles an hour, and I can throw myself and grab the wheel, and it's not going to stop. It's just going to crush me into a mulch, basically. So, you know, you make your own decisions and you make your own bed. There's some people that have gotten away with it, and the people that do get away with it, usually they have some celebrity, and the government doesn't want to create too much, attention to them. So there are people out there that claim that they did it. Matter of fact, that April Lejeune, she's one for becoming a state citizen, and she uses UCC-1 and all this other stuff, and you become a banker and all this stuff. I'm afraid to even get into all that, to be honest. You know, I mean, and she actually has, if you look at her methodology and her paperwork, it makes sense. And she claims, and I believe her, that one of the reasons that the Clintons never get in trouble and all these people on that ilk is because they're not part of that corporation. They have not entered into it, and they retain their autonomy. And so whether, you know, it's a club, though. Are you in it? Are they going to let you in it? I don't know. Do you know how to get in it? You know what I mean? For me, I think there's more important things right now, since all this stuff is coming to a head anyway, and I don't think it's going to last much longer. So I don't spend my time and efforts in those places. I'm trying to put them, like what Brent says, concentrating on the sheriff and the posse, the militia, because that's who we are, and that's where we are at this point in history. I think those are going to be the important parts, and all this other stuff about the taxation and, you know, who you are and all that, I think that's all going to go away. It's all going to fall away when and it's going to go like dominoes. It's going to all fall at once, and it couldn't happen soon enough as far as I'm concerned. But anyway, go ahead. I don't want that. That's long-winded enough on that. I don't know if I answered the question, but I answered it to the best of my ability.
Okay, thanks. Next question. I am writing to ask your opinion on the lawsuit being filed by Friends of the Constitution, and they list a video reference here through BitChute. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it. Anyway, is this a group that NLA would suggest we take part in, or is this something that works against NLA?
I don't know if I'm familiar with that. Remember that? Remember that thing you sent me? That guy? He wants to open up a convention.
I don't think that's this one.
And he is doing a lawsuit. So see, there's a lot of stuff out there right now. I don't know about this particular one. But you got to be careful, because like that one guy, he was pretty good, except the part that I didn't agree with, and apparently neither did you, Jam, was the fact that he thinks he needs to change the Constitution. Now is not the time to open the Constitution up to change, because you got all this evil, and that all they're going to do is make it worse. They're not going to make it better. We need to enforce what we have. Maybe we need to throw away a couple of unconstitutional amendments, but I don't believe that you have to open up the Constitution for a convention to take anything out that's unconstitutional. You know, that Marbury versus Madison says that anything that's unconstitutional, you know, falls on its face from the beginning. It confers no power, no authority, and you can disobey it from the beginning. So we don't need a convention to get rid of these things. What we need is a grand jury. And we need a presentment that writes it up and says, look, you will no longer do these things or those things. Or we've come to the conclusion that, the 17th Amendment disenfranchised the state's participation in the vote or something like that. It's not rocket science. It's easy. But people need to learn what their power is, and that's the problem. They don't know. And just like what Brent was saying, the sheriffs have no idea of the power that they have and the oath that they're taking. And what are they taking that oath to? If they need to study that Constitution and see where their power comes from through the Magna Carta and tradition, the Shire of the Reef and all that. It's very, very important in these times. And it's going to become very, very important in the next few months. I think we're going to be on a steep learning curve here. But anyway, I don't want to go too far afield. I don't know if I answered that question or not.
Yeah, you're right, Gerard. That was Friends of the Constitution. I just checked the reference. So
okay,
avoid
so,
them. They want to rewrite things and open things up.
Yeah, I mean, they need to be educated. Somebody needs to get a hold of them and say, look, you can't, now is not the time. That is not what the problem is. You know, we have a good document. They're just ignoring it, you know? So anyway, I guess that's the best way I can answer that.
Okay. The next question, how can or how do I proceed from here? Now, this is from someone who has signed up to be a jury administrator, has taken the Civics Constitution Government by Consent course, wants to know what to do next.
All loaded up and no place to go, huh? Have gun, will travel.
That's right. Paladillin.
Yeah. Well, if you took all those courses, then you're ready to educate your sheriff and to start your committees of safety and do the. We have a plan. You know, if you read the plan that John has written, so many very poignant and very good reading things as far as what our plans are. Everybody has to get on that and figure out where you fit into that. Because there's lots of things, lots of places you can exercise your knowledge. Look at knowledge is power. The question is where are you going to exercise it? Are you going to run for office? You know, that's not a bad thing. You're going to become a committee man. You're gonna you know, maybe the thing is to concentrate, I think, on the county, to take your county back and your towns. You know, and towns are more powerful than you think you are, just like counties are more powerful than anybody ever realized. You know, when a town makes a law, it's the same as if the state legislator, it has the force of the of power as if the state legislator made it. That's why when you make a law in a town, it gets sent up to the State Department and it gets looked at for constitutionality, and then it gets written in just the same as if the state legislator did it. So it's a lot of power, and that's where you can have your counties negate some of this stuff that they're putting in, some of this COVID protocols and stuff. The county, the towns and the counties could say, we're not going to cooperate with that. And that's what Trump did. He said, no, let the governors do what they want, which actually what it means is that state rights. When he said let the governors, that means let the counties and the towns do what they want, because that's home rule law that filters all the way down to them, because that's the true sovereigns, we the people. That's where the government by consent is. That's the level that you plug into. That, you know, when a petit jury comes up with a decision, that decision is above any decision that anybody can make, even the Supreme Court. And we have numerous Supreme Court cases that reiterate that and cement that in our heritage, that you can't even lie about it because there's so many cases that affirm that. So if you're all ready to go, just figure out the place where you fit the best and then start acting there. I mean, I don't care where it is. It should be in the town or the county. Maybe the election board. I mean, look at what we got going on with elections. We need to redo our whole election system. We need to put in place watchers, and we need to get rid of some of this electronic stuff and push for paper ballots. There's a lot of work out there to be done. I could go on and on and on. Use your imagination. But if you took all those courses, that means that you have the knowledge and the ability to see what's wrong and to then use common sense, common law to push that, to fix it, and to educate them. It's no different than that lady that was in the emergency room asserting her rights, saying, no, I'm not going to do that. This is our right, and I'll take them out of the hospital if I have to. It's the same thing. You have to assert your rights. Otherwise, because nobody else is going to do it. So I don't know where to tell you what to go. Only you know what you're suited for best, you know, whether you can speak in public or what. But every place you turn is corruption. You can start cleaning. You can start making a difference at any level. And don't forget the schools and the school boards. We've had revolutions going on in schools. I don't know how, if you're watching any alternative videos of these parents coming in and screaming at the school board. As a matter of fact, there was a school board that walked off, and the parents all got and voted a new one in one night, got rid of them all. That was kind of neat. So anyway, I guess that's the best I can answer that.
Yeah, more power to the school board. Leave.
Yeah.
And let them be replaced. Okay, last question. Infamous Kenny's usually on the call, but he's not tonight, so I'll ask his question.
Okay.
He wants to know when the Monday night call is going to be a discussion group like we're having, open forum, instead of a John Durash's book infomercial.
Well, the book infomercial was important, and it's timely. And that's why we've been pushing that even to the, you know, I know people get tired of that, but look at, this is the best that we can do. This is 3 hours of, you know, I know John gets long-winded sometimes, but he's trying to teach and review. And I thought we had a pretty good discussion here tonight, and maybe not every Monday night, because there are certain agendas that we want to go through because we see that there's a problem somewhere, so we focus there. But really, I think we're pretty well-rounded. I don't think we're, you know, maybe you're not going to love every week, but, you know, you got to keep coming back because we have very gold nuggets that happen here, you know. Seems like any meeting I miss, that's when something really cool goes on. But anyway, it does. We have our moments, and I can't promise you every week that you're gonna, you know, say, "Wow, that was good." You know, I mean, we strive for that, but we're doing the best we can, I guess. Anyway, that's all I can say with that.
You know? Okay. Yeah, that was the last question, Gerard. So
okay.
Time for the queue.
Okay, the queue. Let me see here. We got Barbara from New York. And at some point, I might end the meeting early if we get slow, because I'm sitting here with a tooth abscess and, you know, with the size of a golf ball on my mouth. I can't believe I'm still talking. But go ahead, Barbara.
Hi, thanks, Gerard. The list that Jan was giving at the beginning, near the beginning, about all the symptoms and all the side effects of graphene oxide or graphene, I forgot which it was.
Graphene, yes.
Is that written somewhere?
It's in the newsletter, he says.
Really?
And I think
I looked in the newsletter, I couldn't find it.
And I think we have in the health stuff too on the tab for health,
on the
right?
On the website, on the Natural Healing page.
Okay.
Natural
Healing.
You'll find in the blue banner, I think it's over under the members one, members duty, or the one
okay.
The drop down, it's the last one drop down. Just click it and you'll find them there.
Great. Thanks a lot, Jim. That's great.
Yep.
I thought the video with the woman who took her husband in, I thought that was fantastic. The things that they try to make you believe are so ridiculous, and the way she just kind of dominated it, it was wonderful.
She was good. She was good.
She was good.
And she wasn't obnoxious at all. You know what I mean? I didn't see any obnoxiousness in her at all.
No, she wasn't. You know, you could tell. But she prevailed. That's the thing, she prevailed.
That's right.
You probably heard this announcement from the White House, maybe it was yesterday, that if you cross state lines, they're going to be checkpoints. And if you don't have, that's when they're going to enforce the green zones and put you in a concentration camp. Have you heard that?
I've heard all these things, but I think most of them are scare tactics. If you don't what? If you don't have your vaccination? So
right.
What is that?
Right.
So there is no pass. There's no vaccination card that's acceptable or official. They haven't put that in yet. They're talking about it, and they're trying. They'd have to have something like a system like that in.
Oh.
If you don't have it, so what do vaccinated people have? They have a stupid little card that the pharmacist writes on with the dates that you could. How do you even know if it's not forged or anything? So there is no vaccine pass right now. So they say, oh, well, if you cross state lines, we're going to check and see if you don't have your vaccination, then we're going to put you in the green zone. Now, that if it gets that bad, and it could happen, because, you know, I don't know how the pharmacies are doing it, but I'm sure there's a database when you go in and you get your shot. I'm sure they must put you in a database. Now, I'm not taking a shot. I don't intend to take a shot, so they can start with me first. But when you go in and you get that shot, are they taking your Social Security number? Does anybody know? I'm sure there's some people.
I can tell you. I don't know.
What information is the? What I want to know is what information is the pharmacy collecting that they're sending up to the CDC so that they can identify you
as
having the shot? Must be something, right?
Well, yeah. There's a plus. You know, do you know about the meeting in October of 2020 where it's online? They recorded it. The FDA met. And they went over in October all the side effects of the vaccine.
Oh yeah, that's why we call it the plandemic.
I mean, they knew in advance all these things, and it's
Not only did they know in advance, but some of the videos that we have up on Video Sanctuary, when Ollie gets everything working, they with Dr. Martin there, David Martin, he proves. That they patented the thing before the detection and the treatment before it was ever discovered. How did that happen?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And then they patented the treatment 3 days before. Don't hold me to it, but there was two patents and they're 3 days apart, and it was the cart before the horse kind of a thing, because you couldn't patent the one when you didn't have the other one to begin with. But they did it anyway.
Right. Right.
So their own paperwork damns them and hangs them.
Oh,
paperwork. And that's where they're going to go down. And that's where we need our investigative committees and our grand juries, because that's the only, there's going to be a lot of people that need to be hung for this stuff. This is ridiculous.
They say that rhinophilia, that there's sometimes when you read about it online, it's exaggerated. It's not really a Nuremberg court at this point. It's something, it's just, but I hear that he's got there's three defendants, CDC, WHO, and Davos. I don't know, I'm trying to verify that.
Are you talking about the German lawyer that has the lawsuits going?
Yeah, right.
Reiner Fulmer. Yeah, Fulmer.
Reiner
Look at he's not messing around, and I'm impressed with him. And he has 1,000 lawyers or something, and hundreds of doctors, and it's going to come out. It's bad, but
I'm wondering if that's what the pressure is, because like the PCR test was done. They did a class one recall, and I'm thinking maybe that's because of Reiner Fulmer, and that's his main focus.
Public is finding out.
Yeah.
And, there's documents. Their own documents are showing that it was never meant to be that diagnostic tool, and certainly should have never been cycled up to 40 and 30 and 40 and stuff like she mentioned in that video that we had tonight. So they've said that they can't use it after December 31st. So what?
Right.
And then when they come out and they go, oh, we've had all these great searches of number in this county and that county, it's all a lie. They're using a test that they've already condemned, but yet they're going to make policy and law, and they're going to make camps and throw people in these things in these green zones, all based on a flawed test. That's detecting influenza A and B. That's all it is.
Right.
But don't forget now that everybody that took the vaccine has now put this new, more deadly virus into the population, and that's the spike protein. That's mm-hmm. That's the pandemic. It's the, and I'm telling you, when all is said and done, and I know this is tough and people don't want to hear it, and they're going to say that I'm a misinformation guy and all this stuff, the people that took the vaccinations ultimately are going to be quarantined, because they're saying it's the unvaccinated that are causing this. That's absolutely a lie. It's the vaccinated shedding that, and I don't even know if it's called shedding. It's transferring that spike protein. Yeah, they're transmitting over to somebody else. They're claiming even their pets die in their homes.
Right. So, you know, Robert Malone, right? He says that the first signs of ADE, you know, the antibody dependent enhancement, are here, because the antibodies in the nostrils or something, they measure it by the viral load in the nostrils, and the people who are vaccinated already have almost twice as much as the unvaccinated. And he said that's the first sign. And he says, by definition, they are more infectious to be around than if they had never gotten anything. And so he declared them as the infectious group, whereas the uninjected are being set up to be the dirty, lower, tier of society. And it's vicious. It's really...
Yeah, there's already a couple of gyms in California that will not let vaccinated people in, because they got a whole insurance company. They asked them, if people come in here with that vaccination and they shed that virus, am I liable? And they said, yes, you got to put signs up and stuff. So that's what they've done.
That's got to be dispelled. That has got to be dispelled. You know, this thing that they're proposing for, if you can't cross state lines, is that supposed to be a federal thing?
Well, it would have to be, I would think, no?
Okay, so we're not talking about New York. Okay, yeah, federal thing, okay.
Well, I don't know. The states could come out themselves, could say, you're not coming into our state unless... I haven't heard mm-hmm. that yet. I mean, that's
but
what they're
like
pushing
said,
for.
We don't have the documentation, except, you know, that FDA group was learning how to use this DNS system where they can track everything using their software. And apparently, you know, there's some baseline amount of ability to track where people go. I mean, they haven't really shipped people at this point. Supposedly it's too early. They haven't been able to accomplish that yet. But they can track where you go when you're vaccinated and how much energy you expend and things like that through that software. And I don't know.
They're tracking everybody's cell phone anyway. Everybody walks around with their dang cell phones on, and that thing is tracking you and listening to you and everything. So, of course, when people get wise to that and things get really bad, you know what's going to happen. People are going to throw their cell phones away.
Yeah, why not?
And that's going to screw them up. Get yourself a little handheld ham radio.
Yeah.
That's probably... Then they'll say, if you have a ham radio, you're a terrorist.
So the Department of Justice has announced that mandating vaccines are legal. Let's establish the fact it's not a vaccine first. And then they say it's legal... And these groups, like the college my son goes to, they have this, we refer to the American College of Health Association, and they say that the whole problem is ambiguous. It's not ambiguous. It really isn't. And then they say, well, we've looked at Jacobson. They were going to work on Jacobson versus Massachusetts. You know that case? It's like the bedrock vaccine case from 1905, and they said, we looked at it, and it says that really you can mandate it. No, it doesn't. It says that if a measure found to protect public morality, health, or such and such and such public good doesn't actually protect it, then it's not enforceable. So, you know, they try to tell us these baseless things.
Well, look, the whole thing's a scam to begin with, because...
Oh, it
because this doesn't even meet the standards for a pandemic. They had to push the numbers and lie about it, and they also had to kill the treatment because you know, in order to get the untested experimental shots out there, there had to be no treatment available. Well, we know there's lots of treatment available, multiple treatments, so that kills it right there. You know, that they should have recalled it already. So they fall down on so many places and so many facts that this thing should be over already. It should be all over but the crying.
Do you know Ole Demigard? I think he's Danish or Norwegian, and he's into these false flags. He's like a real specialist about false flags, and he researches them really hard, and he tries to prevent them. And he's supposed to be really good. I heard Renner Filmick interviewed him, and he said, I've got to tell you that this whole thing is a fuzzy cotton candy version of what they wanted it to be, that they wanted to, like, do this massive shutdown of the world basically in one or two days, in which the military came in and everything was coordinated on the same day. And he said, I got in and I distributed information, and they had to come up with Plan B. They were going to get people, the military of the world, like on top of their people. He said it was October the 23rd, 2019, and it fell apart. And he said that's why everything looked so bad, which I thought was very interesting. But anyway, it's a really good interview.
I'll have to see if I can get that. But a lot of what Donald Trump put in place took the wind out of their sails, you know, and a lot of the stuff he did cut the money for them to continue, you know.
But he did Operation Warp Speed, and he did Operation Crimson Contagion. I mean, he's deeply involved in it. I don't know
about those things that you're talking about. I haven't heard them.
Operation Warp Speed?
Warp Speed, yeah. Well, Operation Warp Speed, he has an excuse for that. First of all, they lied to him. He was depending. They wouldn't let anybody in that White House, not even his family. And so he gave the CDC to that top guy. That was a big mistake, and he's gonna. It's his responsibility because he put them there,
he gave the what to the top guy?
The guy that he put in the head of the CDC when he first came in, evil, evil man, and he told all lies about the
Redford.
Whole.
Redford.
Yeah.
Okay.
So in other words, he was deceived by him. He's got to come out and make a statement about that. And he said, look, the only alternative, now this is World War III or IV, whatever you want to call it. And he said they were ready to lock the world down, which would have killed more people than the vaccine. They had to come out. I'm telling you, if they would have locked us down and put us in these camps, how long the economy would go down, there'd be no food on the shelves. The least of your worry would be COVID, and they wouldn't even talk about it anymore. They would just, so his thing was, is we got to get to a point where they think they have a vaccine. And they lied to him about what they were doing, you know, as far as, you know, how bad it was. And he had to go by their information. But it was a decision, just like Normandy, putting all those boys on the beach when they knew they were going to get mowed down. But they had to do it anyway. Because in war, there's casualties of war. And there's overt and covert. That, you know, I mean, I'm not judging him because I wasn't there, and I'm telling you, this thing is deep, and it's evil. And
it's got to be evil to go through DARPA, and he knew that.
Yeah, well, he's working with what he has. He had more enemies around him when he first got in than there was nobody he could trust, and they locked even his family out of the White House. Probably told him, you can't go in there. You're going to get killed. He'll get killed. This guy. But he did what he had to do. And so I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt until everything comes out. And I think it's about to come out. And I think that he's got a lot to answer for as far as some of the decisions he made. He needs to tell why that happened. And I think he will. I think he did make some mistakes. Look, nobody's perfect. He's only human.
Well,
and
what about 5G? I mean,
what's that?
Yeah. 5G. I mean, there's a whole string of stuff that's made this into a catastrophe. And 5G is one. And the USMCA, which just completely does a bulldozer over the Constitution.
What's the USMCA? What are you talking about?
USMCA, it was replaced NAFTA.
Oh, okay. Yeah. The Space Force thing?
No. Well, yeah, but the USMCA was the one where we have a treaty with Mexico and Canada, and basically it overrides, if you read the text of it, it just overrides the Constitution.
Well, nothing can override the Constitution. The Constitution itself tells us that. So whatever, look at Hitler. Hitler went in and changed the laws in order to take control, but it was all unconstitutional. All that stuff is unconstitutional. And that's what Marbury Madison says.
Yeah.
They put official papers, but they have no force of law. And they only have the force because we hold them. Oh, look, they got this thing. Who gives a shit? They ignore it because it's not law.
It's like the PREP Act. It's like, the PREP Act says this. I don't care.
Exactly.
The PREP Act is racketeering at, on steroids. So I don't care what it gives them the power to do, Yeah.
So that's the attitude that you have to have. Look, I want to move on because it's getting late and I've been on a long time.
Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah. Okay, we got next. Thank you, Barbara. We got David from New York. He will be unmuted.
Hello, my friends. I got a quickie question for you. I'm out in Rockaway Beach, Queens, New York, and there was an issue involving the rock jetties. They're installing these rock jetties out in the Rockaways, and apparently... those on these rock jetties. I was just curious, what would be the approach to, to these people when...
I'm getting like every... You're breaking up and I'm missing half of what you're saying there. Try it again.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. Your signal's going away. Go ahead. You said something about they're putting these rock jetties in, and I didn't get the whole thing.
Do you hear me now? Do you hear my audio now better?
I do. I'll let you know if you fade out.
Okay. Yeah, they're putting these rock jetties in, and apparently they do not want you to be on the rock jetty, and they had put up a small red sign that said keep off jetty. I was just curious what would be the approach to these people and how would I challenge that, being that I accept my own responsibilities of walking on the jetty, and I think it's a little ridiculous keeping people off a rock just to to give out summonses.
Also, there's not necessarily any health or safety reason to not go on the rock jetty. It would be the different. It would be the same as if skiing is dangerous, so we're going to outlaw that, right? So, what would be? I don't know what the approach is. Usually the thing that works with government the best is when a bunch of people get in and do civil disobedience and say, "Look, we're going to crawl on the rock jetties. If you cops want to wade out here into the water after us, you feel free." But, I don't know. Matter of fact, who enforces that? And whose law is it written in? Is it, you have to find out where that's coming from. Keep off the rock jetty might not have any force of laws for all I know. It might be an administrative thing. It might only apply for employees for all I know.
Yeah, they're citing the Parks Department. Parks Department regulations is what they're citing.
Okay, so it's in a Parks Department regulation. So that's an administrative law. And basically, what you got to say is, well, that doesn't apply to we the people. We maintain our that only applies to park employees. Of course, they're not going to want to hear that, you know. But and that's ultimately the truth of the matter, you know.
Well,
so,
right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you got to pick your battles. If that's one you want, it's better to go in with a bunch of people and let them explain themselves why they don't want you on the rock jetty. I would put a paper in saying, look, this is a misuse of power and it's arbitrary and capricious. That's a good legal term, arbitrary and capricious. Show us what's behind this that's in the greater public good, so to speak.
What's the purpose? Right.
What's the purpose?
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, we got Jim from PA.
Sure, Jim in PA. Can you
hear
me?
I can.
Hey, I'm going to show that NLA is probably the most informative conference call every week. You know,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to prove that with a couple of my questions tonight.
Okay.
That's all. Okay, well, first of all, before I do that, I wanted to invite either yourself or John to speak at our national meeting in October in Fayetteville, North Carolina. I think you were looking for venues to speak at, but this one is a national meeting for our political party in North Carolina, October 22nd and 23rd. But, I mean, there's time. But I just wanted to set it up with our, you know, the party, if that you, one of you gentlemen could speak, or both of you.
Yeah, I'm sure that we would, either or both of us would love to do that. Does that mean our presence needs to be there, or is it going to be, can we do it through like a Zoom thing, or should we need to go down there?
Well, that's what I'm trying to bring it up in advance, because, I'll run that by if you want to do the Zoom,
I would love to go down there. I'm not saying that I couldn't, but, you know, the thing is we, you know, I don't know if I can afford it or if there'd be funding available or what. So, you know, what's the sense of going down there and spending a couple days, hotel, this, that, if we could do it by Zoom? But,
yeah, I'll run it by them. I'll find out more and get back to you.
And I'm sure John's very much interested also, so.
Yeah, I think it'd be a group that'd be pretty much receptive of what we have to say.
Right.
Okay, here's another one. You know, these are things that I hear from people that I assume are somewhat reputable, but that the wife, you know, it's questionable, but the wife of a Pentagon staff. I guess it leaked out that the military was ordered to go run and give the injection, but they refused. Any validity to that?
I have no idea. I haven't heard anything like that.
Okay. Yeah, I just thought that I'd run that by. That the gentleman's pretty much involved, and but I just that's what he heard from the wife. And I don't know. Did they leak out things like that to the family?
Well, there's a lot of misinformation going around, a lot of leaking, because both sides play this game, this cloak and dagger 3D chess game, you know, and so you got to be careful with what you run with. And, you know, when they say they ordered the military to do it, but the military refused, well, at what level? I don't know that came down to the rank and file military. It sounds to me like it was more up on the general and colonel level, if it happened at all, you know what I mean? Because if it got down into the rank and file, I'm sure we would have heard about it on multiple news agencies. I mean, I listen to guys that are ex-special forces and ex-this and ex-that, and they have resources in the military, and I didn't hear anything like that from any of them, and usually they're pretty good. They got their, you know, they got their spidey senses, they got their fingers on the pulse. So I don't know if that's something that, unless it was something that happened, I haven't really been this past week because I've been under the weather. I haven't been doing my normal canvas of these alternative news sites that give me good, you know, reliable information based on the stuff that they predicted before that was true. So I don't know. I don't know if that's just another piece of stuff out there. And, you know, look at that. That would upset the powers that be, the black hats, if they were ordered to do it and they refuse. That shows that they don't have the control that they think they do, right?
Absolutely. I wanted to run this by NLA to get it out there and for whatever it's worth for the intellectual dialogue.
I really don't believe that American troops will ultimately work for our downfall and fire on American people. And I'm not saying none of them will, because there's some that would, you know, we know these guys get in yahoos and they brainwash them. But on a whole, I don't think that the American military is going to work against the American people. I think if anything like that happens where it's going to take a military action, it's going to be a UN derived thing, and you're going to see Chinese troops or something else like that. You know, one of the ways that Russia held power so long is they had such a vast providence, and the languages and the religion and the customs were different from providence to providence, so that they were able to take troops from one place and put them in another place. And they didn't feel like they were fighting their countrymen because they were so different. America is not like that, okay? We all love pizza and apple pie, you know what I'm saying? So it's like it's going to be very hard for them to use troops. And so if they can't use troops, what they're going to do is they're going to end up turning the troops against them, and they're going to be our militias, so to speak, right?
I guess. Like I said, it's just a question I've never...
I don't know. I guess if I find out, I'll have to report more on it. But I did not hear anything about
yeah.
Anyway, you got okay. Go on.
Okay. Let me ask. Then there's a, I believe I just didn't research it yet. The name of the form that you asked for from the administrator of a COVID injection and ask them if they're liable. I think there's a form out there.
Oh, yeah?
I'm pretty sure it's NLA that might even have it posted somewhere. Name of a form and that you say to the administrator of the COVID, say, well, are you going to be liable?
It's Wisconsin.
Will you sign this form before you inject me with whatever's in that that syringe?
And they won't. They won't sign it.
But do you know a form that I thought it was NLA? Maybe I'm just so.
No, we had put out there a question form for officials, and it's a bunch of questions that you ask the official to answer before you'll subdue yourself to him, where his authority is coming from, and usually they can't get through it, and they won't get through it because ultimately by asking these questions, you find out that they're usurping their power. And I think that may be what you're talking about. It's the form to question officials, like when they show up at your door or whatever. There's a series of questions that they have to answer for you, and then sign the thing swearing that's true. Are you going to get their cooperation on that? No, probably not, but it's a good thing to put out there because it certainly takes the wind out of their sails, and it shows that you know, that what they should know, and maybe they do know, but regardless of bringing it up to the forefront. As far as the vaccine, it's still voluntary, so they're not, you know, if they're saying that you have to have it or lose your job, then you can bring a form and say, okay, it's a negative consent in a certain sense. I don't know. I have to get you the real terminology.
So you know where I'm coming from.
It's what it says is I will agree to do this. I will agree to be held under this if you agree that if this happens, you're responsible, or that happens, or this happens, or that happens, you can guarantee me this, this, or that. And if you can't do that, then you have no business trying to force me to. Now, anybody that's telling anybody that they're going to lose their job because they're not taking the vaccine, they're all going to suffer some very, very serious consequences, because this is an experimental vaccine. They have no legal right or precedent to force you to take anything like that. That's under the Nuremberg Code. That's under Mengele and all them. That's what they did, and that's no different with this. So they cannot enforce it under even our law, natural law, international law. I don't know why they walk off and act like, you know, they can do this, and people think that they can do it, and they get all upset. Until they actually come out and make a law, which would be unconstitutional, that says you have to do it, but they got to take that step, you know, and then we get the opportunity to fight that. But right now, you know, if an employer, he's doing it on his own. You see, this whole thing, they're trying to make it so that you can't buy and you can't sell and the stores aren't going to let you in. They're letting them enforce it. The government is not making laws and enforcing anything yet, because they know that they can't get away with it. So they think if they get the stores to do it and the employers to do it, well, we're more powerful than that. Because, like, if Walmart doesn't want to let you in, guess what? We should boycott them. We should stop going to them. We don't need them. You know, it's you know, and civil disobedience and all that. You know, it has to be pushback from the public. But right now they're on very shaky ground legal-wise. And I would, if anybody told me anything like that, I would give them what's known as a notice of liability in their mail and notice them three times under common law, and I would pull them on the carpet to answer these questions and show them that you're going to hold them liable. Forget about holding the government liable. Hold the individual actors liable, because they're, what's the government? It's a fiction. It's not even real anyway. How can you sue the government? That's suing us. That's ourselves. But you can sue the actors now, can't you? You can hold them responsible for the crimes they're committing. So that's where I would go with that.
Yeah, I was just trying to figure out the name of that form, but
yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'll do some research and come up with, you know, I know that there's a couple different forms out there. I don't know if you know what a negative avertment is. Well, that's the closest thing that I can say that form comes to. Basically, you know, I have seen, you know, negative avertment in a case is I have not seen any evidence to this or that, you know what I mean? And that's considered a negative avertment. And I'm sure that Brent could speak more on that. But there is a form that basically says, it's called an acceptance. I don't know if Brent, if you know what it's called, you can pipe in. Something about, I'm not refusing, I'm accepting with these limitations or whatever, with these conditions. So everything they do to us, they need our permission. And it's all negotiable. And it should be negotiable, because if it's not, then it's coercion and everything else. And there was no, and it's not a contract. But anyway, anything else?
Well, okay, I'll do this last. I forwarded to Jan the marriage relationship through Anthony Fauci, who he's connected with a Bush alumni from one of the schools. I don't have the information in front of me, but I forwarded it to Jan. Maybe Jan would jump in if he had that for him, because I did forward it to him. But, you know, he's connected to the Bushes through, well, not through marriage, but a alumni of the Bushes.
Well, even his marriage is a scam, because his wife got put up as the head of the ethics committee. And it's funny that he developed a shot, and she is doing the ethics of human experimentation, And being that they're husband and wife, they can't testify against each other, right?
I
almost think it was a marriage of convenience that they did it just because, you know. Anyway, that's my own take. And well, not my own. I got it from other people that said the same thing.
Yeah, like you said, I think it goes a little bit deeper as far as the connection with a Bush.
I don't doubt it at all.
Alumni from college.
And I'm going to tell you, the one that puts those lines together the best that I've ever seen is Polly St. George, Amazing Polly. Go look for her, AmazingPolly.com, and I think she's on Rumble or BitChute. She does such good deep dives on things and draws lines between just by asking the proper questions. It's unbelievable what she comes up with, and it's stuff like that. Guess who Anthony Fauci's wife is? Like, you know, he's right here under our noses the whole time, right? But nobody asked the question. She's like the little kid in the room goes, but he has no clothes, you know what I mean? The emperor has no clothes.
Well, Gerard, once more, I just wanted to show that how informative the conference call can be every week. It was very informative to me, to share information.
Absolutely.
That's all I have. I just want to say good night.
Okay, thanks a lot. Thanks for participating. Let's see. We have Michael from Michigan. Go ahead, Michael.
Hello. Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Yeah, this is Mike. Yeah, I. This is not really a question. It's like informative commentary.
Mm-hmm.
I make my own hydroxychloroquine wine. What?
Cool.
What?
We can get can get healthy and get drunk at the same time right now. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's right. Right. I feel good no matter what when I take it.
Right.
But see, what hydroxychloroquine is synthetic quinine.
Right.
So there's quinine in grapefruit. The grapefruit flesh has quinine in it. That's the more quinine it has, the more bitter it is.
Mm-hmm.
But the skin is really loaded with quinine. That's why it's so bitter. So what I do is I like grapefruit. I eat it. I put the skins in baggies, put them in the freezer. And then when I get a bunch of them, I'll fill up a big pot kettle with it. And I add a lot of water. I mean, this is like a 2-gallon kettle or whatever. And I add a lot of water over the grapefruit skin, and then I boil it down. And this might take an hour or two, whatever. But I get it down where maybe I have a half an inch of liquid out of all that water left, and it's really, really bitter because it's got a lot of quinine in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I add honey to it to make it a little more palatable.
Mm-hmm.
Then I still mix it with other wine because it's still bitter. But see, what I'll do is pour it into a wine bottle, and then I'll add Everclear to it to make it the wine, and the Everclear is just basically a preservative.
Right.
And the stuff really worked because I got sick. It's interesting how I got sick. I rode in a van with another couple to, like, a family event, and I really didn't want to do it because they'd both been vaccinated.
Oh, boy.
You know, it's kind of an awkward situation. But I rolled with them. Sure, as daylights, I got sick. And I think I got sick because they shed.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was coughing for 3 or 4 days, and like I had cold, flu, whatever. But every time I start coughing, I'd take my hydroxychloroquine, which is actually the real quinine wine, and it made a noticeable difference. Now, I figured what's going around is the COVID. Maybe I got a touch of it. I don't know. But I whipped it like in 3 or 4 days, and I'm almost 78 years old.
There you go.
And also the ivermectin, I went out to Tractor Supply and bought it in a tube, And
don't tell anybody.
It's got notches on it for like 250-pound increments if you weigh 250 pounds.
Well, actually, each notch is 50 pounds, each notch. It's 50, 100.
I forgot what.
But 250 is actually marked on the tube. It's written out,
okay.
250. But each hump of that little needle is 50 pounds. And from what I've discovered, people that are using that, and it's like, this is a no-no. That's an animal medicine. You can't use it on people. It's the same crap, and it's the same protocol. It's 50. It's one click, which I don't know how many milligrams that is, per 50 pounds. Per 50 pounds. So,
I'm a heavy guy, so I can handle the 250 pounder.
Yeah, 250. That's right. And I just took it, and that's what I did. I based it on 250, even though I'm a little under that. And there's no.
Now there's
ivermectin. You can go a little bit over, and it's not going to hurt you. It's not poisonous at all, really.
Mm.
At those levels, it's like aspirins. It's the same dose over 12 up to an old person. So, that 12-year-old might only be 50, 60 pounds, and the adult might be 250, but it's the same protocol. You know what I mean?
Sure. Well, there's another one that I studied a video on, and it was very convincing. All I can say is I have to use my powers of discernment, you know. But it really was convincing to me, this video I watched. And what this doctor's done, he said he's done it forever. You've got lung congestion or nasal infection, a sinus infection, whatever. But what he'd do is he'd take hydrogen peroxide like you buy in the store, which is like, what, 2 or 3%?
3%, yeah.
3%. Well, he'd dilute that, 3 parts water, 1 part hydrogen peroxide, and he would put it in a nebulizer.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that always took care of him. He claimed to have a patient that they sent home from the hospital with pneumonia, and he thought he was going to die. And the doctor wanted him to come in and get a nebulizer, you know. And he says, I can't. So he sent his wife in. She got it. The guy could hardly breathe. And so, yeah, the hospital basically sent him home to die, and he was frantic. And they did that. They used the nebulizer with that hydrogen peroxide and solution of 3-to-1. And said in a day and a half, the guy was feeling pretty good. So I have, and I've already experimented with it when I got sick. I have, and I don't know if, I'm not saying this is the thing to do, but this is what I did, is I have a CPAP machine, and it's got a humidifier in it.
Right.
So I'd mix up a little bit of peroxide with the water and put it in that humidifier. You know, it's only about a quarter of an inch at the bottom. And I make sure it wasn't in too high a concentrate. It was diluted at least 3-to-1. And didn't hurt me, you know. I got over it, like saying.
I'll tell you what I know about hydrogen peroxide, because I have used it. I've had experimented with it. And the paperwork that I got and the courses I was looking at, they said you really should try to get food-grade hydrogen peroxide, because the stuff you buy in the store has a lot of preservatives in it, and people could be sensitive to that. They could get a reaction.
Yeah, I think to be on the safe side, it would be good to use food grade hydrogen.
Now the trouble with getting food grade is it's usually 30%, which will burn a hole right through your hand if you're not careful.
Oh, wow!
So you have to dilute it. If you just dilute it with water is all it takes. And there's a thing you follow, because you got to go from the 30% down to 3, so that's a multiple of 10. It's very easy to figure out. And you dilute it, and we've used it in nebulizers for a long time, and it works really well. Oh, yeah. Yeah, this was something that was big, you know, 6, 7, 8, 10 years ago.
I didn't know that.
They also use it in cancer treatments. If you can find a doctor, I don't know if anybody will do it anymore, but they actually intravenous it into the blood, like a transfusion. And like for cancer, it completely annihilates it, because basically what hydrogen peroxide does is it adds oxygen. And basically what you're doing is you're oxygenating the blood and the tissues. And we know that cancer is anaerobic. It doesn't like oxygen. Mm-hmm. So that's, and a lot of those viruses and infections, it's the same thing. They burn up in oxygen. So,
well, on a different note, but I think in these times where we really, myself, I like to stay away from doctors as much as possible. I think we really have to, part of this whole mess is learning to doctor for ourselves and know the remedies. But have you ever heard of finbendazole?
Say that again.
Finbendazole.
Can't say that I didn't.
It's a dog warmer. And I found this out on YouTube, and I watched the original video, I think is down, but there's still videos on it. There's a guy named Joe Tippen, T-I-P-P-E-N, who claims to have cured himself of cancer, and he had stage 4 throughout his entire body, everything, in his bones, in his organs, in his head, and they sent him home to die. And it's kind of a long story, but he got a line on finbendazole from a guy who was doing experiments with mice and so on. And it's a dog warmer, and he claimed they sent him home to die, and he was riddled. It started out with small cell lung cancer, and they got rid of the lung cancer through whatever, radiation, whatever, but that was the good news. The bad news is it metastasized through his whole body. He was riddled. And in 2 months, he went back to the doctor, and he is what they call NED, no evidence of disease. And he used finbendazole, which is a dog warmer, and they give it to goats and so on, but it's basically a dog warmer. And I think he used CBD oil with it too. But I think the finbendazole is the key element that he claims to cure his cancer. Well, I'm not saying it's ironclad, but it's something we need to know in our bag of tricks.
Well, ivermectin, they use it on Ebola, believe it or not. People think it's just a warmer. It's not. It works on a molecular level. It's completely different. And if it can cure something like Ebola, my goodness. You know?
Oh, yeah. Well, this brings, I don't know how much time you got, but this brings me on to another thing that I discovered. And it's a medication that Dr. Fauci recommends that you want to be super careful about. And I know a guy personally that was in the hospital with pneumonia. They thought was pneumonia.
Mm-hmm.
He kept filling up with fluid. And they finally found out, because they thought he had pneumonia. Well, the fluid wasn't pneumonia. They diagnosed it with heart as a heart problem, and his lungs were filling up with water. Well, lo and behold, I wish I had it written down. I've got it here someplace. Matter of fact, I think I found it. Dr. Fauci recommends this for COVID pneumonia. And lo and behold, they tried that on Ebola. It's one of the drugs they experimented on for Ebola. And there's like 3 or 4 drugs they're experimented with. But they took it off the list, quit even trying it, because it was killing people. And what it was doing is basically destroying the kidneys, and when you destroy the kidneys, you fill up with water, you see. And in an x-ray, if you've got pneumonia, it shows up one way. If you're filling up with water, you can plainly see it. It's different because you will see the water line in the lungs. Mm-hmm. So people should know that if they're going into the hospital to stay away from that drug. Let me see.
This is the drug that Fauci recommended?
Yes. He
I would stay away. Anything Fauci says, I would stay away from as a matter of course.
I think the name of it is menticide.
Menticide. Kind of like emphasize.
No, that's not it. That's
maybe
not it.
People side.
That's something else. But anyway, I'm sorry I don't have the name of that drug. It has a generic name and then a brand name.
Right.
And but it just came to mind. Otherwise, I'd have had it on hand beforehand. But I think that is something somebody, and I will research it. I'll find it. But
yeah, send it to Jan so he can put it in the next newsletter. That's where that stuff comes in. I mean, besides these calls, we have the newsletter where we put stuff in like that.
Okay. I'll get that information and feed it back to you so you can let people know about it.
All right. Thank you.
Well, I've taken up a lot of your time, and it's been super listening to you. It's a great program. And
well, I appreciate that. And because you brought up a treatment, I just got this from Terry, and she says, Brian, I don't have my glasses, Amber Doth wanted me to tell you about plantain, the herb, not the banana-looking fruit. Broadleaf or narrowleaf will help with infection. Place a leaf and or stem, fresh or dry, in the gum and cheek overnight or for the day to ingest. Excellent antiseptic and removes most any infection for teeth, skin, wherever. I've used it many times. Welcome to call or text me for more details. Just leave a message. I usually find plantain in parks, lawns, and roadsides. It is a standard favorite for my medicine cabinet. Free and highly effective. Brian's number is 541-647-4185. So there's lots of wild stuff you can use. I just bought a book about the Forgotten Book of Wild Herbs, and my goodness, there's so much stuff in there that's growing in your driveway. You can't believe it.
Well, do you know what plantain is? I just found out about that a couple weeks ago.
Well, I didn't know that there was a herb, and not. I knew what the banana was, but not the herb.
It grows.
Well, to my knowledge, and by the pictures I've seen, I've got a yard full of it.
Yeah, well, I think I just heard Jan in the background saying it grows everywhere. What do you call it?
Buckhorn.
Yeah, I think I've heard that.
Oh, my lawn's full of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, your lawn is normally full of that stuff, either narrowleaf or broadleaf. And it grows in the driveway.
Well, thank you.
You drive and it'll kill anything else, you know?
Right.
You know, I'll get out of your hair, buddy.
Okay, thanks.
Well,
I got burdock over here taking my yard over, and I used to fight it every year. Then I found out it's good for this and it's good for that, and if you dig it up, the health food stores are paying all kinds of money for the roots. So I didn't kill any of it. I got a whole bunch to harvest this year. It's like it's taken over. They get 6-8 feet tall, these burdock. And every part of that burdock is good to use for different things. So that's another interesting one, including the root, or mainly the root.
Was the Fauci recommended drug something like remendazole?
That's one that they were giving out. That was an antiviral crap, but it's got bad side effects. I know
right.
that.
Don't take
Revestazole or something. I think Trump took that one, or they claimed he took it.
No, I don't think he did. Well, maybe he did.
Revestazole, I don't know.
And ivermectin.
Resveratrol.
Resveratrol.
Ah, maybe that's...
Yeah, that's the one.
Not to be confused with the what's the stuff in wine that's supposed to, in fruits that's supposed to be good. It almost sounds the same. But
Oh, I found that drug. Are you still there?
Yeah, what is it?
It's spelled REMDESIVIR.
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 Yeah, I think we're talking about the same thing.
And then there's also the one, its other name is VEKLURY. And according to what they say, that baby kills the kidneys. And it'll fill you up with water.
Right. Well, anything that comes out of the evil people over there, I wouldn't trust anyway. I'd do the opposite, they say.
Exactly.
So, anyway, I'm going to move on where it's getting late. I was going to say something, but I lost my train of thought, so I will unmute Ross. Thank you, by the way, for that. Is that Michael?
Mike, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
okay.
You're entirely welcome. Glad
okay.
to do anything I can do to help.
Thank you. Okay, Ross, you've been unmuted. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Ross from San Diego, Oregon, in Clackamas County. Also, I found a book called Bill of Rights on Amazon from Sean Patrick. He explains the historical background on these amendments. Original 10 amendments of the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
You think National Liberty Alliance should use that book to teach people their rights?
Say that again. I didn't understand that. Use.
Oh, I said the Bill of Rights.
Yeah.
By Sean Patrick is a good tool for people because I feel like people don't know their rights really because we aren't
right.
educated in them.
Well, the first 10 amendments are good, but they put some other ones in that aren't so good. But the first 10 are definitely,
he just talks about the original 10.
Right.
He doesn't mean the other ones after it.
Right. Which we, you can stick to the original 10 and not get in trouble, Some of the other ones are not so good.
Yeah, like but, the original, the 13th Amendment from the Reconstruction era.
Right, right.
Or the 15th Amendment and 14th Amendment.
Or the 16th, which I think was income tax.
Yes, and that's the same one that comes in along with the Federal Reserve
Act. And the funny thing is, it's been written about. It says it doesn't confer any new powers of taxation. It's the qualifier, the excuse.
Yes, and I think that a lot of elected officials think they have a lot more power to get more money from us.
Right, right.
So, because people believe in that government can get more money from them.
Yeah, well, we didn't create them to get money from us, basically.
No. And
that's not what government's purpose is. And Brent had a lot of good tidbits in his speech about that.
I think the purpose of it was to protect our rights.
That's right.
The only reason that it was supposed to be there.
That's right.
So I think it's just because the progressive era changed the ideology of our country away from the Constitution.
Well, that's what we have to do. We have to educate. We have to bring this stuff into the school systems. Got to go to the school boards and all that stuff and start fighting them, start pushing back. We see things can happen when people push back.
that we have to gather enough people to do that. That's the problem.
Because when nobody's watching them, they do whatever they want, and then we end up with all this Agenda 21 crap in our schools. You know, and
yes. Horrible. So, because companies say, make us choose, the companies people work for make us so busy we can't even pay attention to our government.
That's right. That's part of the trick. Keep us busy.
Also, distract us with, and distract us with also entertainment.
Yeah.
Because that's how they control population of the United States.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they do it worldwide, really. It's the same old
that's
crap.
That's even worse.
Yeah.
That's even worse than... It's just in the United States.
Yeah.
So how we change it, that's the problem. It's be a tall order to do.
Yeah, it is. It's a matter of getting people educated so that they can articulate. You know, just like that lady in the hospital, if she didn't know what her rights were and she didn't insist on them, her husband would be dead today. So that's what it takes. You know, what to do? Well, open your mouth, right? Start. Yes, look at what did our forefathers say? They said, the truth will prevail as long as somebody proclaims it.
Yes.
You know, and people today are looking for leaders. So if you know the Bill of Rights, you know the Constitution, and you can spout them off, you could sit in a grocery line and do that, and people will think that you're amazing.
Yes, I think the thing for me is sometimes I have a problem with communication because I have a hearing loss problem that causes me not speak clearly enough.
Right.
And that's why my mom thinks I can't organize a community of safety.
Well, you know what? I don't believe that that's necessarily true, but you know what? Get with somebody who can help you. In other words, you take your time. I understand you. We've had lots of discussions here. You've been on lots of times. I don't believe that you cannot organize a committee of safety. But you got to have you got to control the crowd too. You know, you can't have them. You have enough trouble pronouncing your words, so you can't have people yelling over you. You don't want a competition. You want people that are going to pay attention to you. So what you need to do is you need to get with somebody else who has some clout, too, and will give you, will also, that authority will filter onto you, and maybe he can explain what you just said or repeat it, so that they can understand it. You know, some people have very good abilities. Well, I have very good abilities myself of deciphering what people are saying, you know, when they don't speak quite clearly. That's a gift.
Yes.
It's a gift. So you need somebody like me who can hear you and understand you and then say, well, what he said was, you know what I mean? And actually, Jefferson had the same problem. He used to he could write very good, but he couldn't articulate it. He had to have somebody else say it for him. He was not a good orator. So we have examples of this in history and in life. So I applaud you for your effort because you you definitely have discernment and knowledge of the subject that you talk about. So why shouldn't you go speak it?
I also my mom concerned. I don't. I'm not organized enough to keep the community of safety organized.
Well, I can't speak to that, but you know what? If she thinks that that's the case, I don't know why she thinks that. Maybe it's true. Maybe it's not true. But you get somebody to do it. You get a secretary. You're supposed to have a secretary, and you know you appoint somebody. You should take minutes. Things like that. You don't have to do all that stuff. You know, and not only that, you get a tape recorder. You know, you should be writing minutes, but you should tape record it.
Yes.
And then write your notes, and then put the minutes of the meeting out. That's how you do it.
Or like a personal assistant.
Yeah, there's no problems, only solutions. There's always a solution.
Another problem I also have is the transportation. I can't drive myself.
Yeah, well, that's a problem. You're going to have to make friends. I don't know what to tell you. You know, you got to find somebody that can drive you around and do if you want to do this stuff. Make friends with somebody, you know.
Because I have a vision problem. That's why I can't drive.
Right, right. Well, I don't know where you're at or who's there, but you should look up other members in your area and see if you can't get with them. You know, I don't know if you've done that already or not, but that's what I would do.
I did. It's just he lives in Ottawa in Westland, and I live in San Diego.
Oh, so you don't have anybody close to you, is what you're saying, right?
Yeah, I have someone I know. I know from other events I've been to through my agency.
Mm-hmm.
But she's not a member of the National Living Alliance.
Right.
That's where I am in the quandary right now, transportation-wise.
Well, right, right. But whoever you can get to help would be, you know, would be good. And I don't know.
Yes.
To tell you about that, you know, maybe, you know, when people used to buy newspapers, you could put an ad in, say, looking for help for this or that, you know.
Yes, I think. Because most people don't read newspapers anymore. That's
no, it's not. That's right. It's not going to work like it used to. We used to do what they. We used to go. I don't know. Meetup is still out there. Meetup.com, and you can go on there and search different organizations. And what you'll find is maybe you have some meetup organization that's very close to a Liberty group like what we're doing already, and that's where I would go looking for compadres. You know.
I found a post, another group I used to be part of called American for Prosperity.
Uh-huh. I think I've heard of them.
Yes, and that group left Oregon, said someone who used to go to my meetings in Clackamas. Mm-hmm. She can help me probably. Says she's also in charge of another organization as well.
Yeah, well, that's what we're trying to do here. We're trying to get these organizations to work together, you know, I mean, to the common goal.
It means I have to also invite her to her Facebook page for that group.
Yep. Well, that's what I would do. Go to those different groups and see who you can get. And just, it's called networking. But anyway, I appreciate it, Ross. Appreciate your efforts. And our prayers are with you. And thanks for all that you do. And I wish you luck. And we're after the hour, so I'm going to go ahead and close it out. I appreciate it.
Okay. Bye.
Okay. Thanks, everybody, for showing up. Good show. See you next week, same time, same channel. Say your prayers and get out there and do something. Have a good week. God bless.
I want to like that for a few moments.